It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this final day of January 2022. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that takes place when this program is live 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round. As this is a internet radio program. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you should happen to pop by the chat room just right here this merry little instant, well, you will be greeted by early arrivers. Early arrivers, Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And at the moment, at least, capably moderated by, well, me. Not much of a moderator, I'm afraid. Anatole asking, "Where's Senorita Robin?" Well, she's right here, and it's Moran Monday on the Horn, and lo, there are many Morans. We will get to as many of them as we possibly can this evening. But of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, consequently, we say thank you to the PayPal contributors that we have. That means thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you, Joy. And thanks as well, to Joy. Because the end of the month is basically all PayPal contributions of a subscription nature end on the 28th, because the 29th and the 30th and 31st all get rolled over onto the 28th. At least that's the way PayPal has always worked. But thank you, Joy. Thank you so very much indeed. Let's see here. The other thing we do on the last day of the month is we thank our Patreon subscribers, because the way, you know, Patreon contributions come out on the first of the month, and so we thank our Patreon subscribers on the final day of the month, and that means thank you to Troy, and thank you to Gary, that would be a Blue Dot in Alabama, Gary, and thank you to Dave in the Blind, thank you to Janice, thank you David in San Diego, thank you Eve, thank you Rico. Thank you to JR, Jake. Thank you to Nancy. Thank you to Jimmy in the Great Northwest. Thank you, Bernadette, she of Pree's Trees, the magnificent salve for what ails you. Thank you, Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Oak. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Michael of the Guffins. Thank you, Baltimore Bob. Thank you to Jeff in Slow. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, James. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Annette. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Joyce. Thank you, Vernon in San Diego. Thank you to Kat in Ohio. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, KW. Thank you, Irwin. Thank you, Barb. Thank you, Horst in Taiwan. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Terrace. Thank you, Frank, a.k.a. Fab. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you so very much, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. And with your kind, kind gifts, helping to keep this program on the air. Because, you know, we don't have any buy gold now ads. We don't have any pitches for Mr. Meth Pillow or any of that. The Bose Wave radios or mattresses made with foam developed, Swedish mattresses developed with foam developed by NASA. No, none of that's here. It's just the goodwill and the determination of a group of committed, progressive, liberal people that we will continue to have independent conversation, commercial-free, and pretty much capitalism-free, too. So thank you. Thanks, everybody. We had we had a decent chunk of a Friday community-made miracle this past Friday on the front porch. And so where we find ourselves is at $396 to finish fundraising for the month of January. That means that we are $96 short on last week, or last Friday, actually, and then we've got the $300 we try to raise every day. So thank you. Thank you all. Hopefully we'll knock that out. It is, as I mentioned last week, my birthday, and I am I'm 1 year old today. Mm-hmm. It's a different number from the actual moment of my original birth, but this is a very special birthday for me because, as Annette has pointed out a couple of times today, and as my dear sister Terry pointed out when she called as well, this is my first birthday as my authentic self, and that has made it so special. I haven't, you know, didn't run out and you know, there was no cake or anything like that. Didn't necessarily want it, but it's been an opportunity to reflect and think about the nature of this thing, as Prince put it, this thing called life. And it's been an opportunity to think about what authenticity means and how good and how sweet that is. The line from that John Denver song, Poems, Prayers, and Promises, how sweet it is to love someone, how good it is to care. How long it's been since yesterday, and what about tomorrow? What about our memories and all the dreams we share? Whew. Let's not get all teary-eyed. No, definitely not going to get all teary-eyed because I did a thing. I'm terribly excited. If you've been following on social media, either on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you know, and we talked about it on Friday on the front porch, you know that Friday I filed to be for a full term as a member of my county's Democratic Executive Committee. I've never been anything but a Democrat. I never had any Libertarian dalliances or Constitution Party dalliances or Green dalliances. I've just been a Democrat because that's how I was raised. I was raised by FDR Democrats who understood that their lives were saved by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Democratic majorities he was able to work with in the Congress when they were little, when they were children. My parents, my father and my mother, were born in 1924 and 1925, respectively. They lived through the Great Depression and the Second World War, and they know what they know what real, meaningful, caring Democratic policies mean. They probably both would have been, and we've had this conversation before, they probably both would have been taken aback somewhat by the concept of democratic socialism. So they were just Democrats. And they understood that a Democrat should care about the working class and the lower class before they ever start worrying about millionaires and billionaires and tax cuts and the like of that. And so that's the kind of Democrat I am. And so Saturday, which was, oh, God, it was cold. I had my paperwork all ready. I had my filing fee. And I drove down the mountain to Charleston, the state capital, and made history. We've done that, but I've done that before. I've been in the company of those who have done that before. The Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 2073, in this Congress right now, was a historical act. Never before in the history of Central Appalachia had anyone put forward a bill that would end the Appalachian apocalypse that is generally known as mountaintop removal. But I was part of that, and I was personally responsible for the name of the bill, the AIC Act, Appalachian Communities Health Emergency. Because it is. It absolutely is. Before there was an opioid epidemic, there was an apocalypse in the hills and hollers of almost level West Baikal Manchinistan. And over the course of the 20 years or so that I've been working on that, as an activist, as a volunteer, I've come more and more to be in love with this place. So very much. And in the course of my coming out, which began in October of 2020 and sort of came to a head on New Year's Eve 2020 and has continued on this program ever since, and alongside the warmth and love and acceptance that I've gotten here has come something similar in my own community, and that is what drove me to make history on Saturday. And when I say I made history on Saturday, I made history by becoming the first trans woman in the history of the state of West Virginia to ever file to run, to ever run for a seat in our state legislature, in particular in our House of Delegates. I'm a candidate, and I'm excited. And all in the world I want to do is to try to give back to my county, my community, a bit of the love that it has given so freely, so generously to me. That is my goal. There's so much that needs to be done in this state. So much that remains undone. And I would like to be a part of the doing of that. I have a primary opponent. I do not know that person personally. I do not, I have no negative opinion. I simply think that in this moment, at a time when the dominant majority, supermajority party in this state is, it can have its way with the people here as it wishes, and what its wishes are do seem to be not kind, not warm, not loving. I want to be able to speak up for the voiceless. I want to be able to speak up for those that the majority party works so hard to erase. And so that will be my focus. The Democratic primary in this state is May the 12th, 2022. And I will bend all my efforts to succeeding in that primary. If I win, I will become the first, I will make history again, the first trans woman ever to win her party's primary for a seat in the West Virginia legislature. And then, if that is the case, in November, I will become, and I win there, I will become the first trans woman ever to hold a seat, to take a seat in the House of Delegates in the state of West Virginia. I'm so excited. And Lord, there is so much work to do. I was so grateful and so pleased to be able to join our dear friend John Britovo in conversation yesterday evening. I had a lovely conversation about my candidacy and where where I want the campaign to go. Thank you, John, for your kind invitation, and thanks to all the members of the Blue Dot family for listening in and checking in. Like I said, there is so much, I mean, you can't get much more grassroots than this campaign, but that's always where I've been most comfortable. I still have to set up a campaign website. I have to set up a campaign email address, campaign social media accounts. It's going to be a lot of work. And I hope that there will be a lot of people who join me in it. I posted a little bit about my candidacy here and there, and there has been an absolute outpouring of love and support. Over on my Facebook page, I also put up an essay yesterday talking about my failings, the mistakes I've made in my life. Because I know all too well that politics in this day and age, being as toxic as it is, that somebody might want to use that as a club. It's shameful, but nonetheless, definite possibility. So I wanted to talk about it first. And so that's there. But like I said last week, there's also a list of things I've never done. And of those things which I have never done, it's substantial. Just on a general basis, I've never summited Mount Everest. But more salient to the issues at hand, I can say that I have, never participated in an insurrection or supported one against civil constitutional governance in the United States, the constitutional governance and the capital thereof. I've never said anytime that it is okay to grab anyone, man, woman, or non-binary, by the genitals. And I've never made excuses for anyone who has said such a thing. Most particularly, I have never attacked the most vulnerable children in this state or their access to medical care. I've never tried to exclude any of those most vulnerable children in this state from an aspect of their education. And you know full well from being a member of this community that I've certainly never barked and grunted about critical race theory. We're going to make our children feel bad by teaching them the actual history of America. Never done that either. Back in the day, I never threw a hissy about Common Core. You remember Common Core? That was so long ago. I've never squealed about Obama's FEMA re-education camps. I've never replaced the flag of the United States with a urine-colored snake flag. I've never participated in any tiki torch lit melees while hollering, "Jews will not replace us." It's kind of a long list, and that's just a sampling. But it does put me at odds with the majority party in this state. And frankly, I'm glad it does. I'm glad I can say those things. Very, very much so. But that having been said, let me check in with a couple of things here. Get the program off to a good start. And now we have concluded, by the way, the probably single most exciting NFL playoff season of the entire history of the NFL.
I don't think that was some good. And I'm not even that big of an NFL fan. I'm more attuned to the college game. But dang, that's amazing. And so, congratulations to the Cincinnati Bengals. I know my father would have been tickled. He loved all things Cincinnati. So good to see the underdog make it all the way to the Super Bowl. I'll be rooting for him. Sorry, Rams fans. But I will be. I'll be rooting for him. And it was nice, but I have a note to get us started. West Virginia says, "Who dey bet on dem Bengals?" The NFL just concluded six of the most entertaining playoff games in the history of the league, with all four of last week's games going down to the final play of the game, and the first game on this past Sunday ending the same way, featuring the Cincinnati Bengals beating the heavily favored Kansas City Chiefs in overtime on the final play. As I've mentioned in the past, I often mixed up the two girl groups from the 80s, the Bangles and the Go-Go's. But, you know, I'm sorry, I've been kind of Bible verse focused, and after there was nothing dishonorable about it. It's just the way how poorly the overtime rules are written in the NFL. The Chiefs got past the Bills the previous week by scoring without the Chiefs or without the Bills ever touching the ball in OT. And then the Bengals did the same thing to the Chiefs. And it reminded me of that business about, you know, those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. One day a rule benefits you, and the next day the rule is taking the rug out from under you. The Bengals quarterback has ice water in his veins, no doubt about it. But anyway, Jeffrey has some thoughts.
Oh, yes, Joey used to mix up the Bengals girl group with the Go-Go's. Well, I, Jeffrey the Giraffe, do declare that Kansas City Chiefs' lips are sealed, and they are taking an early vacation, and the Chiefs are having a manic Monday after being totally stunned by the upstart Bengals yesterday. Icky Woods declared yesterday, who day, think they can beat them Bengals. Well, Icky and Bengals will be doing the Icky Shuffle out to L.A. for Super Bowl 56. Yeah, which just blows my mind, you know. I'm just a few years older than the Super Bowl itself. Junior with some super thoughts.
Joey may have gotten the Bengals and the Go-Go's respective rock groups mixed up, but he's never mixed up these Bengals with the Go-Go Sox of the 60s, the Chicago White Sox. So I say, Go-Go Bengals and win the big one.
Good job, Jeffrey and Junior.
I personally love Joe Burrow not only as an NFL quarterback, but as a person, and in a joking fashion, after watching Joe Burrow escape two critical pass rushers and running for two critical first downs in leading his team down the field to tie the game, I told my wife, I love him. I want to have his baby.
Junior's back.
I told Joey that I do not think that it would be anatomically possible for him to conceive a child.
Well, Junior, anything's possible these days. Well, Bob became Robin, didn't she?
I changed he to she. Because I was she all along. Good job again, lads.
Immediately after the game, Robin texted that he was tickled by the Bengals win, and the three of us mentioned to Robin, happy birthday, as that was a very nice birthday present one day early. So happy birthday, Robin. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, Junior. I felt the same way Robin did, as that game took me back to when I was a teenager back in 1974, and Mean Joe Green, Terry Bradshaw, and Franco Harris upset former Alabama quarterback Kenny Stabler and the Oakland Raiders in the AFC Championship. Kenny Stabler.
Was it Kenny Stabler, though? Was that Ken Stabler in the Immaculate Reception game?
I think we're going to need the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department to take a run at that. To go on to the Super Bowl, wow, did yesterday's game bring back some memories. I've been a closet Bengals fan since Athens, Ohio native Joe Burrow was drafted by the Bengals. Yeah, the former Ohio State graduate Joe Burrow ended up with the Bengals via a short, successful stay at LSU. Yeah, that's correct. Joe Burrow actually graduated from Ohio State, though, the Ohio State University, before departing for the Bayou and winning a national championship. Jeffrey's got some graduate thoughts.
Yes, and maybe if Urban Meyer was a better judge of talent, he would have chosen to start Joe Burrow over Dwayne Haskins, and maybe the championship LSU won would have belonged to Ohio State rather than LSU Bengals.
Oh, good job, Jeffrey, with the Bayou Bengal reference. Ironically, and more to Jeffrey's point, Dwayne Haskins will probably be starting for the Steelers next season with the departure of Ben Roethlisberger. And won't that be interesting to have two former quarterbacks who once fought for the starting job at Ohio State now be competing to win the AFC North? A junior with a quarter of a thought.
Dwayne Haskins has a lot to prove as a quarterback in the NFL, but Joe Burrow is already proving it. Both these guys were number one picks, but only one is playing like it.
Ooh, a little sharp. Nice play call, junior. I'm also thrilled to see that the Cincinnati Bengals have five former Ohio State Buckeyes, along with Joe Burrow. There's Eli Apple, Von Bell, Sam Hubbard, and Isaiah Prince. Isaiah Prince will play a key role in the Super Bowl. By the way, Alabama has two players on the Bengals, and West Virginia has one very crucial player sporting the Bengals' orange and black, and that is the left guard, Quentin Spain. I'm glad Joey mentioned Quentin Spain, because I have so much respect for him, and I'm so happy for him. And Stephen New York sent along a picture of Quentin Spain hoisting the AFC Championship trophy. And he has worked, and his journey has been so long and so hard to get there. And he's a game-changing offensive guard. And it thrills me to see a Mountaineer do good, because I bleed old gold and blue. That's old gold, not the old gold. Old gold, like burnished, not all shiny. And think of the Ring of Power when it came out of the mud at the bottom of the River Anduin. What am I doing? What am I doing? This Super Bowl will likely come down to the offensive line of the Bengals. Both Isaiah Prince from OSU and Quentin Spain of West Virginia will both have to play well for the Bengals to win. These two will have to fend off two of the NFL's best pass rushers in Aaron Donald and former Super Bowl MVP Von Miller and keep them away from Joe Burrow if the Bengals are going to win Super Bowl 56. Jeffrey with some plain Spain news.
Did you mention Prince and Spain in the same sentence? Well, I will have you know that yesterday, while Isaiah Prince and Quentin Spain were helping the Bengals win the AFC Championship, the former Prince of Spain, Juan Carlos, was celebrating his 54th birthday.
Oh, muy bueno, Jeffrey. Finally, speaking of Quentin Spain in West Virginia, I'd like to extend a big hearty thank you to Bette Midler for tweeting in response to Joe Manchin's non-support for Joe Biden's Build Back Better program. Midler called West Virginians poor, illiterate, and strung out. We talked about that. It was a horrible thing to say, and it was, and she immediately repented of it and apologized in the form of a real apology, not a typical Republican non-apology apology, as in, I'm sorry if anyone... No, that's not an apology. That puts the onus on the person who is offended for being offended. She just flat out apologized. Big Gouverneur Jim Justice said, "Now, I in no way, shape, form, or fashion condone or believe the sentiments of Miss Midler to be true." And then, as we discussed on Friday, he picked up his poor dog, baby dog, and turned the poor thing around and halfway upside down, probably scared. We're lucky we were not subjected to a display of just how afraid poor baby dog was, exposing the dog's tail and, well, it's a little dog butt and her little dog, JJ, while telling Miss Midler to kiss the dog's hiney. Midler showed statistics demonstrating the fact that West Virginia ranks at or near the bottom in healthcare, education, and infrastructure, economy. She then tweeted that the dog's ass would make a much better governor than Jim Justice. This has been Joey's Journal for More and Monday, the final day of January, the 31st day of January, 2022, with Giraffe wishing Robin a happy 59th birthday. Thank you, boys. And so there's a $25 Who Day Shuffle challenge on the table. By the way, Department of Corrections, Bengals versus Chiefs. The Chiefs won the coin toss for overtime and elected to take the ball first in NFL playoff overtime history prior to yesterday. The team getting the ball first in overtime had a 10-1 record, but after getting one or two first downs, Mahomes threw a tipped interception, which gave the Bengals the ball around their own 45. Then the Bengals ground out about four first downs to get into short field goal range, and they won the game with a chip shot field goal with plenty of time left on the clock. Right. Still, live by the sword, die by the sword. With that list of things you've never done, Arthur says, you stand no chance of getting elected. Well, thank you for your optimism. God, I needed that. Not really. And Stephen, New York, shit you've never done. Hey, Robin, you've never carried a Confederate battle flag on Parliament Hill in Ottawa, Ontario. You've never carried Nazi Hakenkreuz on the Parliament steps. You never called for execution of the Canadian Prime Minister. By the way, all those things did just happen this weekend in Ottawa. Yeah, I know. The big COVIDiot anti-vax mask hole controversy. The stupidity. Stand by a minute, please. You know, I'm pretty sure that the warranty on that that Mazda CX-9 is well past any help, seeing how it got totaled and everything. But oh well. Yeah, but it is. It's more in Monday, and we've had we've already got a good conversation started. Where to go? Well, I think I would be remiss if we didn't take into account the conniption that Nitwit Nero threw over the weekend. I wonder how people could, and there's probably no profit in this. If I was thinking in Ferengi terms, there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But sincerely, how do people continue to defend his horrifying actions? I mean, even Lindsey Graham, Lady G, even Lindsey Graham said, enough is enough. Of course, he said that before, and next thing you know, hold me, Donald. But I don't, after what happened Saturday in Texas, Nitwit Nero said that anybody who participated in the insurrection against constitutional governance that took place on January the 6th, 2021, he said he would, if he returned to the Oval Office, he would consider pardoning them. And one wonders how this was not obstruction of justice, or at least conspiracy to commit, or before the fact. But the upshot of all of that seems to, I mean, the whole outburst, the whole conniption seemed very much like an admission of guilt. And of course, because he is in fact Nitwit Nero, he doubled down. I get the Save America, President Donald J. Trump, not former president. He still thinks he's president. I mean, thinks is probably the wrong word. But yesterday he said, and I saw it in my inbox, and if the Vice President Mike Pence had absolutely no right. Now, just behold the analytical brilliance of this. Liz Harrington tweeted it because, you know, Nitwit Nero doesn't have a Twitter account. And so she's, you know, she does his dirty work for him.
If the Vice President, Mike Pence, had absolutely no right to change the presidential election results in the Senate, despite fraud and many other irregularities which did not exist...
I added the "which did not exist" part.
How come the Democrats and rhino Republicans like wacky Susan Collins are desperately trying to pass legislation that will not allow the Vice President to change the results of the election? Actually, what they are saying is that Mike Pence did have the right to change the outcome, and they now want to take that right away. Unfortunately, he didn't exercise that power. He could have overturned the election.
Remember all those maggots marching around singing, "We'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree. We'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree." Remember that? No, they were just, no, they're not actually that creative. They were just chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." And they brought their own gallows. It was a BYOG insurrection, you might recall. Bring your own gallows. In other circumstances, it could have been a bring your own gibbet. Gallows and gibbet, both starting with G. Oh, and by the way, thank you, Brendan, for getting us started this evening. We are now down to $386 to go to finish fundraising for the month of January and not end in a hole. He thinks because he exploited a vagary in a poorly worded statute that the Vice President actually did have the power to simply willy-nilly conduct a coup. I think that's rather violative of the spirit and even the text of the plain language of the statute. It's just a matter of cleanup. But the other thing is that this yawp, this burble, this word vomit, I mean, you can almost hear him dictating it to Liz Harrington. This is what is called a statement against interest. It is virtually a confession that he was in on the insurrection. And he's getting, I think it's because he's getting nervous. Because, among other things, he specifically attacked three African-American prosecutors, New York and Georgia, the Manhattan District Attorney, the District Attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, and, of course, the Attorney General of the state of New York, and, wait for it, this is rich, called them racists. Called them racists. And we probably need to just deal with this for a second, just in terms of getting the language tidied up a little bit. A minority person cannot, by definition, be a racist. A person in a minority can be a bigot, certainly. For instance, you would say, using fictional characters, Archie Bunker on All in the Family was a racist, among other things. His next-door neighbor, George Jefferson, was not. Even if George Jefferson despised white people, he still would not have been a racist. This is how the word works. What George Jefferson was a bigot. A bigot can be a racist can be a bigot, but a bigot cannot be a racist if they are part of the minority against whom racism is aimed. Maybe this is all just too much for the sorts of people who blindly follow the likes of a nitwit Nero. Or maybe they just don't like it. Yeah.
Ralph says, Drumpf would consider pardoning people for 1-6-2021 when pigs fly. Well, I don't know. If you ever have the stomach to see him with his shirt off, maybe you can see if there are wings sprouting back there. Sorry, couldn't resist. Stephen, New York, says, Nitwit Nero, it occurs to me he's actually worried that the law is closing in on him for the first time in his life. That's precisely why he's doing this, these shrieking yawps. And in point of fact, he called for people to take to the streets again. He literally doubled down. And you know, there's a part of it that is frightening. There's a part of it that says that we are perhaps in more danger than we know, and that's been the case the whole time. In fact, after Tony Scalia became fat dead Tony Scalia, and it was time to it was time to pick a replacement. Well, and this was May 18th, 2016. He had a list of 11 potential nominees he said he would consider. And back then, and I guess we just all expected it, assumed that this would be the case, all 11 were white and 8 of the 11 were men. And it was kind of, well, you know. Yeah. He is who he is. Remember, he is the son of a Klansman. Remember, in 1929, his daddy was busted attending a Klan, participating in a Klan riot in Jamaica, Queens. Remember, he and his daddy were busted by the federal government under the Fair Housing Act for their act of their pattern and practice of refusing to rent to people of color in their properties. Remember that? They would mark an application with the letter C for colored. Yeah. Which brings to mind a case coming out of Florida, you know, where there's a Republican, a wild-eyed Republican majority, and where a young man by the name of Daryl Campbell was elected to represent a district in the Florida House of Representatives on the 11th day of January, 20 days ago. But down in Florida, the governor, in this case, white supremacist adjacent Governor Rona Death Sentence, who only became governor of the state of West Virginia, state of Florida, hello, Dr. Freud, who only became governor of the state of Florida by the narrowest of margins, with the assistance of real live, no kidding Nazis robocalling for him. These are verifiable. Those robocalls were very real. And so he appoints the Secretary of State. Here in West Virginia, the Secretary of State is an elected position, but in Florida, it is an appointed one. And the Secretary of State refuses to send the letter certifying the election of Daryl Campbell until March the 8th. Guess what March the 8th is? March the 8th is 3 days before the Florida legislature adjourns sine die. The Orlando Sun-Sentinel reached out to Mr. Campbell, and he said, I remain hopeful. Am I surprised? I'm not. It's just unfortunate that our constituents now are being faced with a situation where their voice does not get heard. the Secretary of State in question is named Laurel Lee, and the seat had a universal primary. That means it was just the primary and nothing. That's the end of it. The winner of the primary gets the seat. And as an excuse, Laurel Lee, who owes her job to Governor Rona DeSantis, said that, well, that would have been the date of a general election that we didn't have to have because only Democrats ran for the seat. Laurel Lee has a communications director, a spokescreep by the name of Mallory Morgan, who said, as a courtesy, we will send a letter to the House and the Senate listing the winners of the elections, but not until after the general election. Ultimately, it's up to the legislature to decide who has been elected and when to seat those members. Now, it's not like it's not like Mr. Campbell is going to tip the balance of power in Florida. But the Republicans there just cannot stand the idea of seating that African-American man. Lest he somehow, I don't know, give the majority party a sad. Democratic leader in the Florida House, Evan Jenny, said, or Jen, J-E-N-N-E, no clue, said, the Secretary of State has one job in this instance, and that's certifying the election. If anything, they've stopped all the parts from moving. They've completely put us on some sort of list of do not respond. I can't get any answers. He even said he walked all the way to the Secretary of State's office to get some answers, but sitting there for 4 hours, nobody would meet with him. No one's called or showed up. They're not responding to anyone. Neither myself as minority leader or, more importantly, no one is responding to Representative-elect Campbell and his ability to represent 170,000 people in Broward County. That ability to represent has been nullified. It sounds like a case for, that noted... That famous lady, Miss Rita Mandamus, to make an appearance in the court system of the state of Florida. I'm joking, of course. I'm talking about a writ of mandamus, which compels a governmental authority that has a non-discretionary duty, ministerial in nature, to act. But I bet we know what kind of court the state of Florida has.
Yeah.
There we are, faced with the Tinkerbell theory of constitutional governance again. If you don't believe in it, if you don't clap, Tinkerbell dies. And here we are. Well, thank you, Frank. Frank has given me a cowbell. Thank you. That's for Bring Your Own Gallows, BYOG. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed that, Frank. I like it when the little quips go appreciated. Well, that's about all Mr. Campbell can do, Ralphs. Maybe file a writ of mandamus. But the courts would probably go, no, Miss Laurel Lee, you know, there would have been a general election. But there's not going to be a general election. You would almost guess that a court of competent jurisdiction with, you know, competent judges would rule on that lickety-split, but it's 2022, and, you know, you'd probably be wrong. Speaking of judges, let's talk about Judge Lawrence Van Dyke. He's another one of those wild-eyed radicals from the Federalist Society. And Nitwit Nero put him on the Ninth Circuit 2 years ago. He was noted as being not qualified to sit on the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Others have referred to him as lazy. And he's developed a sort of a habit. The American Bar Association said, nope, this guy should not be on the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And the American Bar Association routinely approves presidential appointments for the federal bench, but it's not a rubber stamp. And so Van Dyke J threw an almost Kavanaugh-esque tantrum in his confirmation hearing.
I apologize.
It's all right.
This was a stunning scene in the Senate today. The presidential nominee that was nominated by President Trump, Lawrence Van Dyke, was brought...
This is audio from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, by the way.
...brought to tears. He was completely composed, and then he was brought to tears over searing claims by the American Bar Association questioning his qualifications and ability to be fair to the LGBTQ community. Correspondent Garrett Tenney has the backstory on this from Washington tonight. Hi, Garrett.
Martha, good evening to you. For decades, the American Bar Association has evaluated all federal judicial nominees, and most are labeled well-qualified. But in a blistering letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee, the ABA said President Trump's nominee to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is not qualified for the federal bench, in part because its evaluation found that Lawrence Van Dyke is, quote, arrogant, lazy, an ideologue, and lacking in knowledge of the day-to-day practice, including procedural rules.
Naturally, the Senate Judiciary Committee said, cool, let's confirm him. I think that was back when, was it Senator Grassley was running the show? Or maybe it was Precious Lindsay? I mean, you've got to be a pretty screwed up individual to get blistered like that by the American Bar Association. But those weren't flaws; those were features when it comes to being appointed by Donald Trump.
The ABA's evaluation didn't stop there, though, and went on to suggest that Van Dyke would not be fair to members of the LGBTQ community, a claim he got very emotional over when he was asked to respond at today's hearing.
Yeah, and of course, again, not a flaw, a feature of his appointment.
Did you say that you wouldn't be fair to members of the LGBT community?
Senator, that was the part of the letter. I did not say that. I apologize. No, I did not say that. I do not believe that.
Yeah, this is something known as the Brett Kavanaugh diversion.
I like beer. I love it when my mortgage and my credit cards get paid off by anonymous donors.
It is a fundamental belief of mine that all people are created in the image.
Yeah, okay, we're going to get into the in the image of Cartman from South Park. I don't care. But the language is always stunning. It is a fundamental belief of mine. That's someone evading something, because if it's really something you believe, you say, I believe. And if it's really, really something you believe, all the way to the depth of your heart, you can even throw out the words, I believe, and you can simply make an assertional statement without the throwaway language of I believe. you can make it as an assertion of fact. You know, all people are created in the image of God.
No, I did not say that. I do not believe that. It is a fundamental belief of mine that all people are created in the image of God, and they should all be treated with dignity and respect.
And judgment should be entered against them if they happen to be from that LGBT alphabet community.
Democrats on the committee are very concerned about the ABA's allegations, though, given that its valuation is based on interviews with 60 people, mostly judges and lawyers, who worked with Van Dyke during his 14 years in law. Van Dyke, a former solicitor general in Montana and Nevada who now works for the DOJ, claims the ABA didn't give him a chance to fully respond to the allegations. Several Republicans are now blasting the organization's supposed nonpartisan analysis, pointing out that the person conducting the interview previously donated to Van Dyke's opponent when he ran for a state judiciary race in Montana.
All I can
now bear in mind that that voice of the guy asking the question of Van Dyke and this next voice, that's young Josh Hawley, the guy who stood in front of the Capitol waving the insurrectionists on in their attack on January 6, 2021. Which puts a little more context to all of this.
What I can say about this letter is that I think it is a shameful exercise in political bias. I have no context or ability to evaluate any of the accusations that are made here.
The ABA has lost its credibility as a neutral arbiter.
That's constitutional scholar Mike Lee.
Arbiter. It should be treated no differently than any other special interest group, which it is.
Now, it should be treated like it was a letter from Anita Hill or something.
For context, the Trump administration so far has had more than 160 of its nominees put on the federal bench.
Yeah, that part. Because that was the collusive nature of the relationship between Nitwit Nero and Moscow Mitch. Yeah. But anyway, Larry Van Dyke is now proving every day that what the American Bar Association said about him was true. A report in the New Republic by Matt Ford notes, Van Dyke's road to the federal judiciary was rocky, to say the least. He was noted as having a lack of knowledge of the day-to-day practice, as well, including procedural rules. That letter said he lacked humility, an entitlement temperament, doesn't have an open mind. So, yeah, the Republican majority said, that's our boy, and put him on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where he is engaged in what are referred to as, he's engaged in sort of middle school conniptions. He said other Ninth Circuit judges are engaged in barely disguised shenanigans and mischief. He said one precedent of the circuit is silly. Accused the court of a nasty habit of muddling immigration law. And in a case about high-capacity magazines, he said,
ultimately, it is not altogether surprising that federal judges who have armed security protecting their workplace,
this is such a tired argument,
home security systems supplied at taxpayer expense and the ability to call an armed marshal to their upper-middle-class home whenever they feel the whiff of a threat would have trouble relating to why the average person might want a magazine with over 10 rounds to defend herself.
Yeah. What she really needs is an AR-15 with a 100-round drum. Ninth Circuit Judge Susan Graber said, A ban on large-capacity magazines cannot reasonably be considered a ban on firearms any more than a ban on leaded gasoline, a ban on dangerously designed gas tanks, or speed limits could be considered a ban on cars. Another of his fellow judges said Van Dyke neither advances our discourse nor gives intellectual support to the legal positions argued by my respected dissenting colleagues. And the crux of the problem remains the crux of the problem. The few remedial powers, Matt Ford writes at the New Republic, that the federal courts possess over their own judges are not designed to address rudeness or incivility. It's supposed to be the job of the President and the Senate to ensure that nominees with the appropriate temperament reach the federal bench, a duty that Republicans appear to have failed. And public chastisement by his colleagues doesn't appear to have had any effect on his open disdain toward them. As a result, Van Dyke will almost certainly continue to exercise judicial power for the rest of his life, no matter how much he demeans the American jurisprudence along the way. Again, not a flaw, a feature. He's behaving like a Trump. Among other things, he was downright nasty, according to the New Republic report. Downright nasty about pandemic rules coming out of Ventura County, California. Because some gun humpers in McDougal versus County of Ventura, they said that the stay-at-home orders of the early pandemic, the plaintiff said, kept them from going to their gun stores, and that was unconstitutional. And he, on the other hand, Van Dyke, said, no, gun stores is essential businesses. Lord of mercy. Oh, well, it's more in Monday now, isn't it? Yes, it is. And I guess that brings us to Joe Rogaine. It's getting a little hot around Pink Shrek. With Spotify saying that they were going to publish some COVID information page, yada, 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 because the thing that Neil Young started, and I said that they would happily swap Neil Young for Pink Shrek any day of the week, which Spotify did. The only problem was Spotify didn't count on Joni Mitchell and Barry Manilow, Dolly Parton, and others pulling their music from Spotify too at considerable cost. Spotify's share prices are behaving like a paralyzed falcon right now. Spotify said they'd put a content advisory on any podcast episode of Joe Rogaine's that discusses coronavirus. Yeah, that's the Tipper Gore parental advisory warning on a rock and roll album that just helps sell more records. That'll just spread the disinformation more. On the other hand, Joe Rogaine said that he's going to try harder to create more balance in his podcast. as I noted earlier on my Twitter feed, providing balance against pitching ivermectin, which is not a treatment for COVID-19 in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Providing balance against telling young people they didn't have to worry about getting the vaccine because COVID wouldn't kill them anyway. Well, that's like saying, you know, I'm going to stop serving pure cyanide and I'm just going to put the cyanide in some Kool-Aid. Oh, wait. And so he put up a 10-minute video over on Instagram, Pink Shrek did.
Hello, friends. I wanted to make a video to address some of the controversy that's been going on over the past few days.
This is
going to
be fun.
And first of all, to say thank you to everyone that sent love and support. I truly, truly appreciate it. And it's been very nice to hear from you. I wanted to make this video, first of all, because I think there's a lot of people that have a distorted perception of what I do, maybe based on...
All right, it's everybody else's fault, not his.
...sound bites or based on headlines of articles that are disparaging. The podcast has been accused of spreading dangerous misinformation, specifically about two episodes, a little bit about some other ones, but specifically about two, one with Dr. Peter McCullough and one with Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Peter McCullough is a cardiologist, and he is the most published physician in his field in history. Dr. Robert Malone owns 9 patents on the creation of mRNA vaccine technology and is at least partially responsible for the creation of the technology that led to mRNA vaccines.
None of which actually has any bearing whatsoever on, you know, barking and grunting about the miraculous powers of ivermectin, which is sold in farm and animal supply stores as horse paste.
Both these people are very highly credentialed, very intelligent, very accomplished people, and they have an opinion that's different from the mainstream narrative.
Yeah, and the problem is the mainstream narrative actually is correct. And, you know, okay, so there's a thing. We've all seen them on various websites, the FAQ. Frequently asked questions. The fact. Well, there's also JAQ, which is akin to something referred to in internet culture as sea lioning. Well, I've just got some concerns. That's sea lioning. You really don't like sea lions after all, do you? The corollary is just asking questions, jacking, or in fact, jacking off. And that's most of what Joe Rogan does on his program. It's a jack-off program. Well, we're not saying it's this way. We're just asking questions. And his audience is primarily comprised of, millennial dude bros of... usually libertarian to, you know, somewhat perhaps socially liberal conservatives and right wingers, but they like to have their position in the patriarchy routinely reinforced because they are, in fact, delicate little souls. And so what Joe Rogan does is he plays footsie with some of the most toxic elements of our culture. Just one example, perhaps. Okay, got a few. I really enjoyed Joe Rogan's work as an actor on the great 90s sitcom News Radio. And that was the second greatest program ever made about the radio business. The first, of course, was WKRP in Cincinnati. And the news reached us today that at the age of 81, Howard Hessman, Dr. Johnny Fever, has left the building. He created an absolutely unforgettable character in Dr. Johnny Fever. In the early episode, he has to check his coffee mug to see what his name is there in Cincinnati, and it's Dr. Johnny Fever. And the doctor is in. Babies, the doctor is in. Well, he passed away. And that character will go down in television history. Well, Joe Rogan played a memorable character on news radio. And I didn't much follow him after that. But he's a big fan of mixed martial arts. I think he was the host of some program on like maybe NBC where people ate bugs or something. And then he created this Joe Rogan Experience where he talked to people about sketchy topics and spent his time being adjacent to, you know, he's sharp enough not to openly advocate racist policies, homophobic policies, transphobic policies, misogynistic policies. But all of those policies are part and parcel of things that his audience holds near and dear to their hearts. And he couches it in terms of just jacking off. So, as I was about to mention, he worked on a comedy program, and I guess is a comedian of some stripe. And at one point in time, there was a story that came out that talked about the fact that Richard Pryor had had homosexual experiences, that he had had sex with men. It's not exactly a secret. And upon finding out the news, Joe Rogan said, I had so much respect for Richard Pryor. I'm paraphrasing. I had so much respect for Richard Pryor. He was one of my favorite comedians of all time, using the past tense. That, and this is the important part, that just disgusts me. At which point in time, his lizard brain, his amygdala, had taken over, because that's, as I mentioned before, you know, that's where, ooh, don't touch the icky blood. Ooh, don't play in the stinky poo. Run from the hungry tiger. That's where all of that comes from. There's not a lot of higher level thinking going on in the amygdala. And that disgust sense is, I mean, that's where phobias come from. And so it's fair to say that, yes, in fact, Joe Rogan is homophobic. He's also transphobic. Having hosted, I believe, Little Ben Shapiro, for those of you who don't pay attention to this sort of thing, Ben Shapiro is the little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby who objected to the big hit of last year or so, WAP, which of course stands for wet ass pussy. And Ben Shapiro objected famously. It is quite possibly the greatest self-own of all time, by saying, well, I'm married, and I've never made my wife wet. Which the entire world then said, oh my God, you said that out loud? But he's hosted him, and Ben Shapiro is rather notorious for his refusal to afford the common decency to trans people of using their pronouns, their gender-appropriate pronouns. For instance, if I were to meet Ben Shapiro, he would call me he. He would say that I am a man because he's got this this biological determinant notion of gender. It's wrong. It's anti-scientific. It's even ahistoric. But nonetheless, being a right winger, he clings to it like a baby clings to its binky. He has hosted people who are white supremacist adjacent, if not outright. And when called on it, he says, hey, I'm not saying I'm like that. I don't necessarily think that. I'm just asking questions. In other words, jacking off. And jacking off is the 21st century equivalent of what would happen when, say, for instance, Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, he's still dead, by the way, would get called out when he, for instance, took a call from an African-American man and said, my friends, you heard the caller. He can call me back when he gets the bone out of his nose. Or asked, why is it, my friends, do you think it that is that all wanted posters down at the post office look like Jesse or Jackson? And when people called him out for what was obviously racism, he said, my friends, I'm just an entertainer. My job here is to make people laugh. I'm only an entertainer. Well, I'm only an entertainer, which he also pled, I think, when he called Sandra Fluck a slut for suggesting that birth control should be paid for by insurance and not out of pocket by women who want to use it. He said he was just an entertainer. Well, that created a sort of a legacy, I suppose. When a guy heard the Beckerhead, last we heard of the Beckerhead, he was having a rough time with COVID. Unvaxxed, you know. But for days and days and days, back when he was having his George Soros spasms, which in itself is a nasty little bit of anti-Semitism, Glenn the Beckerhead brayed day in and day out about George Soros and the Tides Foundation. It was a form of stochastic terrorism. He couldn't know who would act upon it, but it is reasonable to think that he, with an audience that size and maybe understanding some degree of statistics, would know that someone would. So he brayed about what a danger to freedom and what a danger to the country the Tides Foundation was, and eventually some dude, can't remember his name, loaded up his guns into his car and headed for San Francisco to blow away the people who hated America at the Tides Foundation, perhaps thinking that he might get lucky and take out that George Soros. As I've noted before in telling the story, the guy, you know, needed a bottle of liquid courage before he could actually do the job, and mercifully was pulled over before he could get there. And so there was not a massacre at the Tides Foundation. But, you know, when it became clear that he had gotten it directly from Glenn Beck said, well, I can't possibly be reasonably expected to think that just because I brayed against somebody day in and day out that they're going to act on my brayings. I'm just an entertainer. Or Bill O'Reilly. He of the falafel.
Oh, baby, you know, if I was there, I'd get you a glass of wine and we'd get in the shower. And I'd scrub his back with falafel.
He excoriated a doctor who provided reproductive health care to women until finally one of Bill O'Reilly's listeners, viewers, went and murdered him. Murdered the doctor. And Bill O'Reilly, of course, said, well, I can't possibly be expected to have... But that wasn't reasonably foreseeable. Goodness me, I'm just an entertainer. I'm trying to provide a little context for what this just asking questions bullshit is about.
I wanted to hear what their opinion is. I had them on, and because of that, those episodes in particular, those episodes were labeled as being dangerous. They had dangerous misinformation in them. The problem I have with the term misinformation, especially today, is...
He's got a problem with the term misinformation because he's jacking off. He's just asking questions.
That many of the things that we thought of as misinformation just a short while ago are now accepted as fact. Like, for instance, 8 months ago, if you said, if you get vaccinated, you can still catch COVID and you can still spread COVID, you would be removed from social media. They would ban you from certain platforms. Now,
what? I mean, asymptomatic spread has been a thing from the very beginning. There was always an excuse with Joe Rogan not to wear a mask. You know, if you don't have any symptoms, why do you need to wear it? Why do we have to wear clothes? I mean, if I'm not peeing on your feet, why do we need to wear clothes? Oh, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy says the NBC program you were trying to remember the name of was Fear Factor. Yeah, that did where people ate bugs and stuff. Yeah, because... what's the saying? Because we have a taste for amusing ourselves to death. And by the way, subject line, Spotify, Matt in San Francisco says, the CEO should be fired. He paid a guy $100 million, which ultimately cost the company $2 billion in losses. How do you keep your job after that? we'll get it all back. I mean, it's just funny money in the market. I mean, our share value will go back up. You got to buy and hold. Got to buy and hold. And is the CEO of Spotify a he or a she? Thought I saw a woman in a clip.
Now, that's accepted as fact. If you said, I don't think cloth masks work, you would be banned from social media. Now, that's openly and repeatedly stated on CNN.
The problem, of course, is that cloth masks did work until the arrival of the Omicron variant, which is orders of magnitude more transmissible than Delta or anything before it. That's the thing that I guess, because he's just asking questions. He's a guy with not much understanding who just I'm just asking questions, my friend. That's what he doesn't understand, is that science is fluid. It does change. And the most important word in the name of COVID-19 is novel. It is new. We knew at the time of its arrival or discovery, we knew exactly nothing about it, or about how it would behave, or how it would mutate, or what effect it would have, except to know that it was damned well deadly. Oh, okay, thank you, Brother Deacon Ace. So the Spotify CEO is a meathead, much like Pink Shrek. Yeah, he is, isn't he? Wow, okay. Thank you to Brother Deacon Ace, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee. So you got your pronoun right, Matt. And yes, he should be fired. Pay a guy $100 million, lose a bunch of well-respected artists, you know, one of whom, and maybe this was part of the motivation, if I understand correctly, Neil Young caught polio, I think it was, as a child. Survived, much like Mitch McConnell, but in the case of Neil Young,
he actually cared about other people. And he's gone on to try to help. He founded a school. Neil Young dealt with tremendous anxiety disorder. And so when he saw what Joe Rogan was doing, and he realized that Neil Young wasn't cashing 19-cent checks from Spotify. Neil Young gave up a horse-gagging load of money that extended into seven digits when he said, you can have me or you can have him. Not both. It's probably one of the most principled stands that has been taken by an entertainer in the modern era. So, yeah, he took a significant monetary hit, but the money didn't mean nearly as much as the morals and ethics that had been dragged into play by the CEO of Spotify and by, Pink Shrek. Yeah, Joni Mitchell, Willie Nelson, Barry Manilow, Peter Frampton, Dolly Parton. Those are some pretty heavy hitters who signed on with Neil Young. It just kind of baffles me. And I guess I'm easily baffled. This is a great little bit of analysis. Arnold in PA writes, Joe Rogan is the frat boy Alex Jones. And Arnold notes, I had horses for 12 years, and I never used that crap, ivermectin. Well, and if you're how come everybody's after Joe Rogan when ivermectin got the guy that came up with ivermectin for humans, he got a Nobel Prize in medicine for treating river blindness that's caused by a freaking worm, not for treating a virus. The whole ivermectin thing comes out of the weird cue ball conspiracy factory. You know, just like eating dirt and drinking your own pee.
If you said, I think it's possible that COVID-19 came from a lab, you'd be banned from many social media platforms. Now, that's on the cover of Newsweek.
So that's the standard. And no, it did not come from a lab. Anybody who says it came from a lab has absolutely no working knowledge of evolutionary biology. Mine is only tangential. But when you take species who do not live together in the wild and you stack them one on top of another, and they swap precious bodily fluids, and they're each carrying viruses, among other things, that the other has no exposure to. Bad things are going to happen. You know, this is another theme that I've touched on over the years. This is the curse of our short human lives. Unless you are of a certain age, I have no memory. I have no memory of what polio did in human populations. None. But I can access history and I can learn. But that's not the kind of thing that Joe Rogan wants to access. He's just asking questions along with his dude bro pals. Just asking questions. Why is there air
You know, 6 months ago, if you'd asked why is there air, you'd have been banned from social media platforms. Now everybody's asking, why is there air? You know, we have nothing but history to rely upon, for instance, to tell us what happened when viruses that had never been experienced by a people suddenly attacked the population. It was far enough ago in history that we that all we can do is estimate the horror of it. You know, scientists estimate that somewhere between one-third and one-half of the entire population of Europe died during the plague of the mid-14th century. It completely reshaped the face of European society and the other societies it touched. It roared all the way from Asia to Europe. But it could not make the jump to the Americas. But beginning in 1492, but in earnest in around 1519, when Cortez arrives in the One World, which is what the Mexica people referred to where they lived as, it was the One World. People began getting sick and dying with these pustules erupting all over their bodies. Horrible fevers. We know now it was smallpox. But the Europeans also brought measles, chickenpox, anthrax. They brought the common cold. And a hemisphere that was, in 1491, the single most populated, densely populated, two continents on Earth. Some scholars believe that North and South America combined had a denser and more successful population than all of Africa, Europe, and Asia combined. When a people with no immunity whatsoever to those viruses were exposed to it, they died and they died and they died and they died. There were people in the Americas who died of European diseases who never so much as set eyes upon a white European. Europeans hadn't even gotten there yet, but their diseases had. And that, in turn, is why we get the nasty myth of the vast, unpeopled, uninhabited wilderness that was North America. The population density of the Americas was so profound that, for instance, there was literally a highway system through the Amazon, where before that, anthropologists and archaeologists had thought it was impossible that any sort of complex civilization could have existed, but lo and behold, it did. And only through aerial photography and things like LIDAR did we find these, because I was there, these causeways and levees through Amazonia. Best guess, and that's all it is at least 20 million inhabitants in North America alone. Basically, south of the Rio Grande to Panama, died. But don't try to tell that to Joe Rogaine. Oh, hell no. Because he'll just ask questions, even if the questions are irrelevant, even if the questions have no bearing on the reality of what is besetting us. But there's no money in just giving the facts.
And you can't be wildly popular, and nobody will pay you $100 million to do your just asking questions shtick on a podcast. Over at the Griot, and thank you, Tracy, for sharing this with me. Over at the Griot, there is a wonderful writer. Who a little while back penned an article called The Problem with Joe Rogan.
And is that why you deleted Twitter? Why? Yeah, that's off my phone, yes. So you haven't deleted your account now. No, I'm still on Twitter, but I will.
That's actually a Joe Rogan clip playing on my phone. Yeah, but anyway, Michael Harriet wrote an article on January 21st called The Problem with Joe Rogan and White Boys. And all of this began, he reminds us, when a group of doctors tried to reach out to the dude bro CEO of Spotify, saying, this guy is doing real harm. And that's why Neil Young got involved. Michael Harriet goes to great pains to say, you're not about to read about how Joe Rogan is racist. You're not going to read how Rogan isn't funny or even deserving of being considered the most influential podcaster of all time. However, I cannot in good conscience declare that I am unbiased when it comes to Spotify's $100 million white man because of one fact. I like Joe Rogan. I paid to see him perform live. I've listened to hundreds of episodes of the Joe Rogan Experience. And that number may well reach four digits if you include podcasters in the Rogan comedy universe such as Ari Shaffir, Tom Segura, and Joey Diaz. I've heard Rogan speak about growing up in liberal San Francisco, living in Florida, and spending his teenage years near Boston, which seems to have created a diverse set of interests. From mixed martial arts to Egyptology to dick jokes. He seems to be extremely interested in things and not just on a facile level. To be fair, I haven't really listened to his podcast since he became exclusive to Spotify. But then, much like Mark Antony saying, I have come not to praise Caesar, but to bury him, he begins to slowly take apart the essence of the Joe Rogan Experience. Even before he became the official COVID consultant to NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers and other prominent celebrities who weren't worried about the coronavirus until they tested positive for it, Rogan wasn't shy about sharing his belief that young, healthy people like himself didn't have anything to worry about when it came to COVID, even though most people aren't as healthy as Rogan. Rogan is so there's a reason Rogan is so fearless about saying what doctors around the world will never tell you. Joe Rogan is not a doctor. Again, this is over at The Griot, Michael Harriet. Rogan has the same medical expertise as a monkey or a man who makes a living describing face kicks. Because his job is to say things, and a doctor's primary role is to make sure each one of their patients doesn't die. And because of that, very few physicians would advise their patients to puff Newports while taking a slug to the torso. That's why we rarely hear actual doctors say, in my medical opinion, you'll probably be all right. This is a takedown, and it's brilliant. And he takes it past. He takes it past the COVID issue. He says, along with an interest in psychedelic drugs, recreational choking, and chimpanzees, Rogan's always held a fascination with white supremacists. Long before a makeshift militia was indicted for attempting a coup on the American legislature, Rogan hosted a sit-down with Gavin McInnes. There's another one. Founder of the then-unknown group called the Proud Boys. He's brought on Peter Boghossian, one of the founders of the Grievance Studies hoax that evolved into the demonization of critical race theory. Joe Rogan played a big part in giving dude bros, Republicans mostly, an excuse to bark and grunt and hoot and squeal and howl about critical race theory. He's had both Jordan Peterson and Chuck Johnson on. The Guardian says that both of them attract a heterogeneous audience that includes Christian conservatives, atheist libertarians, centrist pundits, and neo-Nazis. Milo Yiannopoulos has been on his show. Stefan Molyneux, who babble about race science. And he says, in many ways, many cases, Rogan is just not intellectually equipped to challenge many of his guests' ideas, especially ones that have formed debunked ideas based on faulty research, personal prejudice, and anecdotal evidence. And noting, you know, Joe Rogan didn't know what he was talking about. He was just saying things into a microphone to millions of people because he can. Because that's what white boys get to do. As with COVID, Rogan and his minions of bearded free thinkers who used to be libertarian will never be substantially affected by the deadly virus of white supremacy. It is disingenuous at best and outright stupid at worst for someone as famous as Rogan to pretend that he is allowing his listeners to explore ideas without acknowledging the actions these positions can inspire and the harm these racist concepts cause in real life. And then this. It might be interesting for him to sit down with author Abigail Schreier to discuss the transgender craze seducing our daughters, because Rogan or his children probably won't be murdered by a transphobic bigot. It's probably interesting to debate if white people are genetically more intelligent than sub-Saharan Africans, because he doesn't have to wonder if his kid's teacher or his cousin's employer saw that Rogan clip and reached a different conclusion. This is a long piece, a thoughtful piece. And it is worth your time if you would like to go and read it. Michael Harriott at the Griot. Thank you. Thank you, Arnold. Arnold says, awesome program. Motherfucking Rogan does not have liability. That's why he can say anything. Yeah. Absolutely. And I can't think of a better recipient of a Moran Monday nomination than Joe Rogan. I'm going to do my best to make sure I've researched these topics and try harder to get people with differing opinions on the show. 11 million people listen to every episode of his program. I'm not trying to promote misinformation. I'm not trying to be controversial. I've never tried to do anything with this podcast other than just talk to people and have interesting conversations. Just asking questions. Because most of the people who listen to his program, as Michael Harriott pointed out, will never deal with the after effects of his ignorance. And when I mentioned this on Twitter earlier today, our pal Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx said, more like he'll have a Klan hour to balance against Black Lives Matter guests, if he'll ever have them. Among other things, as the Daily Beast pointed out and Angelo shared with me, Rogan once said, it's very strange to call people black unless they're from the darkest place of Africa. Because he's just saying things, just asking questions.
Yeah. He's hosted a guest, Jordan Peterson again, who says there's no such thing as climate. Jordan Peterson, in that conversation, said that Michael Eric Dyson, no, really, Michael Eric Dyson, isn't black. Because Jordan Peterson is still butthurt because in 2018, Michael Eric Dyson referred to Jordan Peterson as a mean, mad white man because he whines about his repression, even though he's fabulously successful. And Jordan Peterson said, well, I'm not white. I'm kind of tan. This is what you can expect day in and day out. And that's what Spotify spent $100 million on, because that is what sells, because capitalism. Nuanced conversation, not so much. Yeah. Nils Lofgren from the E Street Band. He bailed out on Spotify, too. Joni Mitchell said, irresponsible people are spreading lies that are costing people their lives. I stand in solidarity with Neil Young and the global scientific and medical communities. And Rogan responded, I'm very sorry that they feel that way. I most certainly don't want that. I've always been a Neil Young fan. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle got into the act. And, of course, the most hilarious portion of all of this, if there is any hilarity to be had, is that is that his dude bros are now saying that he is being, of course, wait for it, censored. Because they also don't know things, just like their hero doesn't know things, and they're just asking questions. They don't realize that it's not censorship to put pressure on a corporation to take toxicity off of its site. They think, no kidding, Joe Rogan's dude bros think that Joe Rogan's constitutional rights are being violated. What do we got a First Amendment for if Joe Rogan can be censored? Baby, baby, baby. The First Amendment to the Constitution prevents the government from censoring speech, not corporations. I mean, there's a reason, for instance, that corporations tend to shy away from advertising on partisan political programs because they want to sell their crap to everybody, not just one side of the political spectrum or the other. Ben and Jerry's wants to sell ice cream to cue ball maggots as much as they want to sell ice cream to liberals and progressives. General Motors wants to sell cars to liberals and progressives, but they also want to sell cars to people who drink their own pee because they think it'll keep them from getting the Rona. Maytag wants to sell washing machines to liberals and progressives as much as they want to sell washing machines to people who think that the election was stolen and that Donald Trump is the rightful God Emperor President for President forever of Merca. And so they don't advertise with anybody that does partisan stuff until they do. But all that, what's his name again? CEO Daniel Ek, E-K,
So cool, he spells it with a hyphen. Ick. That's an old George Carlin joke. Didn't see that. All he could see were the twinkling dollar signs. If he just gave Joe Rogan $100 million for his just asking questions... then the money would pour in. Unfortunately, people are dropping Spotify in record numbers. And they didn't want to do it. They didn't like doing it. But it became a moral choice. It's a reminder of the fact that in the final analysis, consumer choices are in fact moral and ethical decisions. I mean, if spam, we know spam, they love spam in Hawaii. Hi, Ken. If spam had a product that said baby spam made with real baby, you know, it's not just the fetus fetishists who would object to that. It's basically every decent human being on the planet. And there would be a consumer outcry. Kind of like the McRib, really, when you think about it. No, that comes back around every year. Never mind, I was wrong. Baby spam. Guaranteed, the majority of this meat in this can is baby. What kind of baby? Baby, baby.
You mean like baby cow?
No, baby! Everybody would object to that. But Daniel Ek didn't realize that with an audience the size of Rogan's and the toxicity that he was pouring into his 11 million dude bro ears, that it was statistically impossible that he wasn't killing people. The fact that he can't be held legally responsible for it does not change the fact. The fact that it was not foreseeable for Glenn Beck that somebody would get liquored up, grab a gun, and head for the Times Foundation does not change the fact that he inspired someone to do it. Or that Bernie Goldberg inspired someone to attack a Unitarian Universalist congregation in Tennessee and put it in writing that that was exactly what had happened. That concept of reasonable foreseeability is what provides the shield for people like Glenn Beck and Bernie Goldberg and Joe Rogan to keep them from having to deal with the consequences of their actions. Jeremy tells me that Trevor Noah had quite a bit of fun with that "You're Not Really Black" clip from Rogan. He said on his program, "Wow, Joe's right, I'm not really black, more like a mulatto," and promptly ran off stage as if he was headed out to the street. Screen went black, and you hear police sirens, and in a large white text, "The police say Trevor is still black." Oh, my God. Flavio pointing out, Newsweek is now a right-wing rag. Yes, it is. Newsweek published John Eastman's musings about Kamala Harris's natural-born eligibility to be next in line for the presidency and got a shit ton of clap back. Flavio also saying, you know, "I first heard of Joe Rogan, Pink Shrek, or How I Met Joe Rogan. I first heard of Joe Rogan when one of my sisters sent me one of his podcasts where he's talking with Barry Weiss about the racist Covington Catholic kids, excusing their behavior, of course. And that was the first and the last time I listened to anything he had to say. That was quite enough for me." Yeah, I've seen some of it and never given it any extended because I found it profoundly boring and lacking in anything resembling intellectual rigor. You know, Pink Shrek had Sanjay Gupta on, and Sanjay schooled him on COVID at great length. I think we even played a clip from it here. Didn't matter. By the end of it all, Pink Shrek was right back to his conspiracy theories.
because he knows his audience. He knows what they tune in for. You know, people used to tune in. Maybe they do, still do. I don't know. I don't listen to him. But, you know, people used to tune in to hear Howard Stern play Butt Bongo. And that's okay. But I think the line exists wherever actual harm starts getting done. And according to the scientists and doctors who tried to talk sense to Daniel Ek, all Daniel Ek could see was the money. And mercifully now he sees the money going away. But he's not too scared, because remember, Igamfu, Daniel Ek got his. Yesterday he said, we're going to have new measures and we're going to address misinformation on Spotify. Yeah, we'll add content advisories to any podcast that discusses COVID-19. The advisory will direct listeners to our dedicated COVID-19 hub, a resource that provides easy access to data-driven facts. Up-to-date information is shared by scientists, physicians, and academics, and public health authorities around the world, as well as links to trusted sources. Nonetheless, there's nothing quite so stirring as the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth that comes from aggrieved white privilege. Joe Rogan said, I'm taking so much heat for this. Well, why don't you cool off by fanning yourself with some of those $100 million there, Joe? That'll probably take the sting out of all of that heat. And all the leisure domain and the fancy footwork and the footsie, you know, I'm not anti-vax. I'm not. Don't come to me for medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I'm just asking questions. Yeah. So, wow, I have actually filibustered through 2 hours of the program here. That's astonishing. I had a note a minute ago from our pal Todd, who said, I was in Civilization today, upscale place, and they were talking about using ivermectin. Unbelievable. Exactly, Ralphs. Trusted sources like Pink Shrek. Let's check in with Todd real quick. Hey, Todd, how are you?
Who is this?
Who is this?
Who are you?
This is not a game of who the fuck am I?
Yeah. You ought to know goddamn well who I am and who you are and blah, 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 blah. No, seriously. That sounds silly. I was shocked.
I mean, hold on. Let's get something straight. I am not white. I am pink. I really am. I'm terribly pink. And not just since transition. I've always been pink. Miss Terry made me laugh so much, so hard a year ago when she said, yeah, the first time I saw her when she walked onto the football field, I thought, that is the whitest boy I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you know, I will say this. When you were on Chris Matthews, not Chris Matthews, when you were on the other guy, what's his face? Chris Hayes. When you were on his show, all the makeup in the world couldn't hide your fucking paleness. I mean, that was like, that's why he had to wear those dark sunglasses and shit, man. The lights were reflecting off your skin. It was like, ah!
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you know, that there's that line in, I forget which character says it in Tu Wong Fu, but I promise in the future I will try to wear a foundation closer to my natural skin tone.
Oh, that was something. I tell you what. You know what? First of all, now I remember this vividly, what I'm about to say here. So let me calm down. You know, Barry Weiss and Professor Gaud got into it about, it might, you know, I forget, I can't recall how many years he's been a contributor to Morning Joe, but it has to be at least, I wrote down four, but it must be five because we've lost like 2 years with the pandemic. So I would say five maybe. They got into it over something that had to do with, you know, ethnicity.
I always like it when Eddie Glaude's on Morning Joe because the IQ of that program goes up about 50 points.
He brings a lot. Because you can tell that he's sensitive to a lot of different communities. And, you know, a lot of times people forget to call, you know, respect his knowledge. But he knows a lot of shit. Believe it. So he and Barry Weiss got into it, and boy, after that, you ain't see there was hiding a hair of him was not non-existent. He was gone. Like I don't know if it was if he did it or you know somebody else didn't want him around because they got into it. They were yelling. They really got into it. So I would encourage everybody to Google that. It's got to be on YouTube. That's how fucking serious it was. So when you brought Barry Weiss up, that was the first time I had seen her, you know, because like, oh, Barry. I'm like, oh, she. And then it was a woman. And I was like, oh, man, she's straight Israeli, you know, with that kind of name. And no problem. But, man, they got into it. So I'm just putting that out there. Like, you know, we have.
Just asking questions.
Just asking questions. Now, this ivermectin shit, I couldn't believe it. I'm wearing a mask, you know, I'm in civilization and I just left the supermarket, you know, I'm doing the little shopping that I can while I'm over there because it's a drive and I was shocked, but they were nice folks. We had a good conversation. I noticed, I was like, oh my God, I'm the only one with a mask on. I didn't even think about it till I left, but I heard people joking like, well, I already had it. So I guess that they were kind of, you know, just trying to lowball how I looked, but you know, and I'll be honest, I don't wear a mask all the time. I really don't, even at work. Now, when we get a lot of
you mean you don't sleep in one?
See, look, don't get me
sorry.
Started. This whole thing, and I'm glad you brought this up about the mask because let me get this off my fucking chest. Seriously, I have to find my. And plus the fact, let me tell you something. Boy, I got the fire. Man, I got the fire. Mm.
Bring it.
Man, where's grandma? Boy, I'm telling you right now. Oh, boy. Boy, we got to cut this radio off. Man, Boy, I tell you, my bones are all loosened up. I feel, man, this is good. It is good for the soul. However, okay, back to what we're talking about. So, you know, these people, man, they have lost their fucking mind. And the fact that they don't understand that, how did they miss biology? It's a simple biology. How'd they miss that? The mask, it's like over 100 years. And it was the U.S. Army, let's say 1915, 16, 17, 18. They didn't even have electron microscopes, and they figured out that, oh, we can mitigate somewhat airborne diseases by wearing a mask.
Well, there was masking by the time of the flu pandemic of 1919. We know that.
That's what I'm referring to. That's because people didn't really.
And we know for real that even though they're just cloth masks or just the regular. Yeah, I mean, we and it was telling, you know, and of course, you know, they're just asking questions over there. How come, you know,
And I don't understand the thought process that takes you down this rabbit hole, but we're just asking questions. Isn't it funny how once the COVID got here, the flu just went away and nobody talked about flu anymore? Huh?
Have you heard that? Say it again, please. Woman, say it again.
Well, I mean, I just think it's strange that once COVID got here, we stopped talking about the flu. What happened to the flu?
Well, what happened to the flu was people started wearing masks, so flu numbers went way the hell down.
I mean, that's logic and reason and common sense. The other side of it is, well, I'm just asking questions. I think it's all just the flu, and it's a flu that was manufactured in a lab in China.
Motherfuckers have taken leave of their senses. You know, like just what you said. You see, now look here. That's Crystal, bitch. Now look. Seriously. They've taken leave of their fucking senses. Let's get clinical here. Okay. There's a muffler on your fucking car. It doesn't trap all the gases, but it does mitigate the pollutants coming out. The mask, of course, is not going to catch everything, you know, not the normal mask that we always wear. However, it catches a lot. And now we know more about this disease. You know, it's really about the viral load. It's different things. I'm not going to get into all that. But it just, you know, it's common sense. It's just science. It's common sense. Why do you cover your mouth when you sneeze? You fool. You fucking fool. Not you. These fools.
That's so you can see what color it is that you're sneezing out. You know, if it's brown, it's brown bile. And if it's green, it's green bile. And that tells you what kind of demons and ill humors you got in you.
Well,
I mean, don't you know nothing about science?
See, what? Am I taking for granted my education? I mean, my God.
Yes, you are. And you're also taking for granted the 10th grade biology that you took. See, I can remember having a conniption on air years and years and years ago when I discovered that there was an opt-out in the law of the state of West Virginia for, like, biology and human anatomy. And this here is an ovary, and that there is a testicles.
Oh, God. Okay. So what does that mean when you go for your, you have to have, well, maybe there wasn't, I don't know. You're supposed to have some standards, like you have to pass certain things.
Yeah, look, Todd, we live in an era where we have people who bark and grunt about how a pharmacist should be able to second guess a doctor's writing of a prescription. You know, but only if it has to do with a woman's reproductive well-being. In good conscience, I cannot fill that prescription for your birth control pills because they cause silent abortions, and my conscience is more important than your health. Even though silent abortion isn't a thing, even though that's not how birth control pills work. So on the other hand, you know, we don't have a conscience exception for a pharmacist who doesn't want to fill a prescription for hard-on pills.
No.
Because a man, by God, a man's got a right to his hard-on health.
Wow. I'm sorry you took me down this path, but I have to mention this because it's just a symptom of what's going on.
I'm a bad person.
You're terrible. You're awful. You're awful. You know, just dig a hole. As a matter of fact, like that deep subway system in Ukraine, if you've heard how deep it is, that's some shit. Boy.
Rabbit hole! Squirrel!
It's like DuPont Circle, man. That motherfucker's down. Ooh, shit. But, no, seriously, it's like if you have to even wonder how fucked up this shit is. Listen to these people. There's not.
You mean while they're sitting drinking a tall glass of pee?
See,
talking about how John F. Kennedy is masquerading as Prince, who's playing in place of the Rolling Stones.
Man, we have it. Do these people not understand that every time that virus, just like we talked about, everything, it played out just like we were talking about. New virus. Okay. That's the worst thing in the world, a new virus. Viruses are terrible anyway. A new virus?
See, when smallpox came to the Americas, it was a novel virus for people in the Americas because they had no way of, they had no natural immunity to it. You know, it killed white Europeans, too, from time to time. But mostly you just got your face scarred up, and then you got well, and you moved on.
Well, look, the fact that this thing has, every time people are not, they're not vaccinated. You see, I just got to say.
Well, that's what Paul from Parts Unknown has been telling us all along.
Well, it's your new vector. That's a whole new.
It's the virus. It's the virus buying lottery tickets. If lottery tickets equal mutations, yeah,
right. See, and it's permutations and combinations in one body, in one person, because it affects your lungs, it affects your cognitive functions, it affects your digestive tract, so. Those are all different ways that it can mutate. That's what's weird about this fucking virus. That's what I'm saying. So now it has figured out to infect everybody. That's what I'm worried about. This particular.
Okay. Well, let me.
Everyone has a piece of this virus.
Let me throw a wrinkle into this. It just so happened that I, at Chris in Germany, he gave me a heads up that they were getting ready to. Talk about the Sue Gray report in the House of Commons over in the UK Parliament. And I knew that was going to be pretty rich. But I wound up getting something out of that I wasn't planning on. And that is that both sides of the Parliament, you know, Labour and Tory,
right.
were talking about the coronavirus in the past tense. People suffered. People died.
They've
decided it's over. The UK has dropped its masking, or at least England has dropped its masking requirement. And those two, you know, those two parties, cats and dogs, have decided that there is no more coronavirus problem. And as Bojo the Clown was saying, because we had the most extensive vaccination program in all of Europe, and because we moved with tremendous speed to roll out the vaccine better than any country in Europe, and they were talking about the fact that they'd beaten it. And, you know, if viruses had any consciousness, they'd be sitting in a bar drinking beer going, hey, watch this shit.
You got that right. Oh, that's a cowbell. No, that's a cowbell. That's
okay.
Serious. That's a cowbell. You remember what a virus looks like? They got the little flagella at the bottom. It looks like a transistor with little legs on the bottom. They're sitting there. Little part. That's the truth. So they're just waiting for this shit to go around the world again. See, that's what I'm saying. These motherfuckers are stupid. What is it going to take? Because there's a lot of people that are not vaccinated. A whole lot.
Yeah.
I know. Let me tell you what happened. Like, look, I know personally. I mean, this is anecdotal, but it's really not. You know, a lot of procedures now. The hospitals are filled up again. You people are cancer. Folks who have cancer, you're in trouble. You're in bad trouble. Because when you start taking that chemo, that's going to make you, you know, more susceptible to this virus. And in addition, that you have to go into that complex where sick people are. I mean, the filters, the air filters do as well as they can, but there's only so much they can do. There's only so much as air filters can do.
Right.
Which is exactly why, and it's not funny now, that, you know, even if I had it, you got to go outside to the MASH tent, you know, an outdoor, like an Army surgical tent with the flaps and such.
Yeah, I get it.
Because until maybe we need to do this anyway, and it, maybe there'll be a boon to the economy. We have to have these ceilings. We have already had false drop ceilings. And I'm saying this from perspective, like I had a little stint where I worked at facilities management, like in a hospital, and I was in charge of Kronos. You know, I was in the office. I was sending out work orders, and Kronos is a wonderful piece of software. It got everybody's time on it. It tells you when. The big thing in a hospital is the filters. Those filters have to be changed. There's codes. You have to change those filters a lot. It's a big deal, and it costs a lot of money. You know, operating rooms, those filters had to be changed a lot. You know, like, so I'm just saying, that's a big deal. So anyway, we have to have fans that will just pull air up and out, and the electrostatic. You remember when we were younger, when the smoke, you couldn't smoke inside, and they had these, you know, you could hear it, like the ozone. You know what I'm talking about? Let me slow down. It's an ionizer, electrostatic. It's an ionizer. And that back in the late 70s, early 80s, they were popular, especially in the casinos, because they would mitigate the cigarette smoke. When, you know, when the air rises, it charges our oxygen particles, and it negates the smoke, and it kills germs. You know, that's why osium. You know, people use osium. It does that. You know, it's an ion, like an electric motor. It changes.
Right, the yeah. Air. And they crackle.
Okay. Right. That's what we're going to have to do, because this is not going to be the last virus. This is not. But I just had to get that out there about that part. Because otherwise, when that, you know, the ventilation, people aren't just waking. They're not waking up. And we got this jackass out there spreading disinformation. And, you know, if we can't move forward with acting like this. We just can't. It's awful. And then with this, like you were talking about the, you know, critical race theory, you know, there are 7 tenets to critical race theory. And really what it encompasses is just common sense. And the tenets of critical race theory are really just historical facts of why certain groups of our population are, well, one reason why they are the way they are. You know, there's a reason that black folks don't have generational wealth. You know, redlining, that's one of them. And you ask people what redlining is, and a lot of people know, but a lot of people don't.
A lot of people have no interest in knowing, and it gives them
a big deal.
It is a big deal, but it gives people a sense of grievance.
They're being mean to us again.
Look, people have to grow up. You know, life is beautiful, but you know the truth is a beautiful thing, and it's a. The truth hurts, but the truth is beautiful because it can help you grow. You know, you had to be truthful with yourself, and you had to be truthful with society. And we had to accept who we are right now. And we're not looking too good. We're really not. But the bright side is that we had the capacity. That's the beauty of our Constitution. We have the capacity to be just excellent. We really do. But what do we want? You know, what do we want?
Well, I mean, is that rhetorical or, you know?
No, I'm asking, and you know what? And I'm thinking about Sister Jude. You know, she asked me if I almost cried when she said that. You know, I don't know if Jude's listening, but
she
yeah,
is.
I'll be your brother. And that almost made me. She don't understand the power she has.
And you know what? She just jumped in with a birthday gift, and we got us down to 327 to go to finish January. We got 40 minutes to do that, but. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so much.
God.
So sweet.
And I tell you what, if we had some more Jews and Tracy's, some other people, you know.
Oh, speaking of Tracy, say hi.
No.
Yeah.
Tracy.
Hey.
What's up?
Yeah. Yeah. What's up?
Talk to me.
How they hanging, Bubby? I'm basking in the glow. I mean, you know, I'm not a huge football fan. That's all. But you know, hometown pride that the Rams won. You know, so you know, I'm remembering the Rams from back in the day when I was a little girl, and I actually had a Rams jacket, y'all. Because they were on sale at Montgomery Ward's, and they didn't have anything for girls, so. With a Los Angeles Rams jacket. Yep. Back in the day. It was pretty cool. But hey, it is what it is. So, you know, I'm good. I'm just hanging in there and enjoying, you know, the day and dealing with the beauty and the terror of a white male privilege and how young it starts. I have this little boy that's in my cab, and he was being kind of funky to his teacher, and I've been telling her that this is what he wants and this is this and this is that. And I said, you know, when you ask people to do things, it wouldn't hurt to say please and thank you. And so he decided to ignore. I said, you hear what I said? And he got pissed off and got off the cab and said, I don't want to sit here anymore. I'm like, I don't care. I didn't say that. So, you know, so he went crying to his teacher, a white woman, and she's like, and so I got the cab and told her what she said. I said, this was before, I don't know what he's saying, but let me just, you know, let you know what's going on. I told him that, you know, when you ask for people to do stuff, you don't order, you ask, and you say please and thank you. And he got mad and got out the cab and ignored me. Because I told him, you know, I don't know, manners? How dare I? So when it was time to leave, because he got the cab, and so they're sitting there, you know, it's okay, you know... That's not an unreasonable request, is it, to say please? I'm like, so, you know, I just walked away because I'm like, I'm not going to let this little boy have me check the case. Anyway, after all is said and done, so then it was time, you know, because he gets out of the cab early. So when all was said and done, it was time for us to go. And he decided that he wasn't going to get in the cab. And I told him, I said, I will leave him here because I'm not sitting here. Yeah, I'm not getting the cab. And he decided to take his time because he was eating. Because I don't allow them to eat in the cab. Because he lives 5 minutes from the school. And I said,
Is this another penny?
No, Penny, No. This boy is well aware of what he's doing. And Penny was fine. Penny was a sweetheart. No. This little boy is just
We got
a word
or a phrase. Are we talking about spoiled rotten?
The cock-tastic. Yes.
Spoiled rotten.
Yes. And apparently, because I was out talking to the black babes at the school, and they said, oh, yeah, he one of them told him, you need to earn stuff. And he's like, I don't earn anything. Everything's given to me. This boy is all of maybe 8 or 9. He's not even a preteen yet. Wow. And so
I'd have done something like that. I'd have done something like that. I wouldn't snatch ball head.
Right. And so when he finally, you know, gets in the cab, he starts to make, you know, all these. I said, Carter, are you okay? And he starts to grunt and all this, and I'm like, okay. So I just ignored him, and then when he got out the cab, he's like, bye. I'm like speaking, you know, it might have been childish for me not to respond to the bye, but I had to keep myself from saying something awful, so I just stayed silent.
If you can't say nothing nice, don't say nothing at all.
Come sit next to me. Quick, what movie was going to come? Oh, yeah.
Treat me like the help?
Yes.
Okay.
This is not going to last long. Because I know I'm pretty sure he went crying home to his parents and all this, and the mean, big old black lady was mean to me, and she hurt my widow feelings, and blah, blah, blah. No, see, that's the thing. As, us as black people, especially black women, we are expected to, you know, just take stuff from people, especially white people. And I'm like, no.
Speaking of which, can I just bring in a point of some just blew my mind trivia? I mean, granted,
sure.
I'm very new to the overall community. This is just something, I mean, maybe other people knew. I didn't. I share a birthday with Miss Tallulah Bankhead. Also born in Alabama.
Wow.
Also born in Alabama in 1902. I mean, she was also born in Alabama. She was born in 1902. I was not born in 1902. I just want to make that clear. I am not 120 years old.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. But she, I get these daily missives from a brilliant historian. And I got it today, and it was marking the birthday of Miss Tallulah Bankhead. And so I'm tickled to share a birthday with her, because she was a force of nature.
She was a bat. When you talk about having zero F's left to give, that was her.
Yeah.
Which is saying she's up there with zero left to give, like, you know, Betty Davis and Joan Crawford.
And so the quote,
which is saying a lot for women back there.
The quote from her today was, the only thing I regret about my past is the length of it. So she said that in 1952. But in the course of reading this little mini bio, I found out something. Because there was always a hidden Hollywood, and people knew things and just didn't talk about them. And apparently, it was an open secret that for a time, Tallulah Bankhead and Miss Hattie McDaniel had a rather torrid affair.
Oh, yeah, they were a couple.
I did not know that.
You what?
You knew that, Tracy?
Of course I did. Come on now.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying it in a condescending way. And like you said, these are things that you're new to. But remember my gender and my quote-unquote race and my
identity. So there are certain things you find out about people who look like me, and huge. Her and she had a couple of other liaisons. I forget with who else, but she was, she was a badass. You know, she didn't care. And she was very liberal, you know. She was progressive in her politics, especially when it came to representation for Black people, and, you know, and not making, you know, Black women always play maid and stuff like that. Oh, yeah.
I had no idea. Yeah. She was, but, yeah. A couple of hell-raising women.
Tracy, what else did she do?
Freddie McDaniel, tool of break here. Well, because, well, you know, Freddie McDaniel, because of, you know, racial covenant here in L.A., there's a part of L.A. called Sugar Hill. And it's in West Adams, and these old Victorian houses. I mean, back to, they're basically, they were mansions. And, Hattie McDaniel famously said, I play a maid so I don't have to be one. I don't have to work as one. You know? And so she was very rich. And she wanted to buy a house in this area, and which she did. And of course, the white people were up in arms. And, but it went all the way to, I think, the California Superior Court. So, yeah, it was, and he said, oh, my goodness, I love this judge, because he ruled in her favor. She did not have to move, which is huge. This is like 1940s.
Yeah, because that's about the same time that Groucho Marx was saying that he wouldn't be a member of a country club that would let him in either.
Exactly, and about the same, not long after that, well, I think this was the 50s, when Nat King Cole moved to Hancock Park, and the people were like, "Well, you know, we don't want certain kind of people moving in this neighborhood," and that King Cole famously said, "You know, do I, so I'll keep a lookout out for them."
God love him.
You know, of course, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, you know, for because people have this conception of California, and especially Los Angeles, being this land of, you know, it's everything's so wonderful, we get along so well here. And it's just, you know, wonder if every family is. No, no. L.A., like, you know, L.A. is probably one of the most racist and still is. By evidence of the people who have run our police force and gone unchecked for, you know, decades. But, and how they use the LAPD, the sheriff's department, and stuff like that to, you know, not to even protect top Black people who moved into certain neighborhoods. They actually helped, you know, run them out. There was still protection. These are people who, you know, legally and bought these homes, and they were offered no protection. But they're good, God fearing. None.
Oh, by the way, you got a note from Arthur Tracy about your passenger. Don't worry, Tracy. That kid's just going to be the future CEO of Goldman Sachs. That's a cowbell.
Oh, yeah. Or it's even worse, the next Kyle Rittenhouse.
Well, yeah.
There's no consequences. There's that. And I'm not saying it jokingly either.
No.
Because, see, these are things.
I'm glad you brought that name up, because I really didn't. We have to talk about that. No, we have to, like, at least.
What, Kyle Schuttenhouse?
Well, I mean, the things in the in the background, not just what he did. You know, let's just get away from that. We know what he did, and we know he put his hands up because he knew he was guilty. It was on film. He felt that's in, like you have intent, right? This is inverse intent. Like you're admitting guilt. You have your hands up. You knew you shot somebody. You knew you killed somebody. And it was like, oh my God, they're not going to stop me. And if I'm not being clear, I think I'm being pretty fucking clear. If you see the video, when he walks past policemen, he has his hands up in the air because he knows he has committed a crime.
And he's not waving them like he just don't care. I'm sorry.
We've all seen it. Am I correct?
I think so, yeah.
Well, I haven't watched it because but I don't doubt what you're saying.
Well, it's quite shocking. And I think that if there were a different judge, the trial might have gone a different way. So, but that's not really where I wanted to start. Where I really wanted to start was, like I said, the ancillary thing. You know, he's in underage, drinking in the bar, around all these, like, middle-aged men, and you know what they're telling him. I mean, come on. You know, like the last guy said, I know it, and you know it, too. You know what they're egging him on. You know, like, you did a good thing, and this, you know, this is bullshit. This is, and the fact that he can just skate along, and it's like, no problem. And you can see, I'm going to tell you, he's going to fall into drug abuse. He's going to do something bad, just like George Zimmerman.
Zimmerman.
What happened after Hill Cage?
10-year anniversary of Trayvon.
Right. What happened? He kept getting into more gun trouble, gun crimes.
Domestic violence. Stuff like that.
Shift gears for a minute because I don't know why things like this just bring them out of the woodwork. I mean, the Tuckio Rose Carlson is having a conniption now and has been over whomever the African-American woman is that Joe Biden will select, nominate to the Supreme Court. Well, the disease is spreading. There's a guy who was a way up the ladder bigwig at the Cato Institute. And, of course, they're famously libertarian, named Ilya Shapiro. And for reasons known but to Almighty God, Georgetown University's law school hired this cat to teach at the law school. And a day before he was going to join the faculty, Georgetown University says they put him on leave. And he's going to remain on leave and off campus until an investigation gets completed. Because he couldn't help himself. He just had to start tweeting about the fact that Joe Biden committed to putting an African-American woman on the court. You know, it's been long enough, I think. And in a tweet that he has since deleted, Ilya Shapiro said, even has identity politics benefit of being first Asian Indian American, but talking about some other judge. But alas, doesn't fit into latest intersectionality hierarchy, so we'll get lesser black woman. Thank heaven for small favors. Lesser black woman.
Yeah.
And so the Georgetown Black Law Students Association said, nope. But I mean, why? I mean, is the white fragility that profound? I guess it is.
That's a rhetorical question, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's already been tweeted, but you know, Joe Biden's going to appoint an African American woman
to the Supreme Court. What happened to judging somebody on the content of their character?
Can I ask you guys something?
I mean, do you doubt me? Are you as certain as I am that that tweet exists somewhere out in the universe?
Oh no, I heard about this last week.
No, I mean,
you know it does somewhere, but we're not going to waste our time and the few brain cells that we have left on searching on it for it. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole. Mm-mm. I just wish, you know, because all this uproar about appointing a black woman, identity politics, and listen, black woman, we're going to destroy blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and he's apologized because he used a poor choice of words, but then he doubled down.
Using identity politics in choosing Supreme Court justices is discrediting a vital institution.
Honey, that ship sailed. The vital institution has long since been discredited. It was discredited with John Roberts. It was discredited, oh my God, never mind John Roberts. It was discredited with the confirmation of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. And you know, the confirmations of Brett Kavanaugh, who likes beer, and Amy Covid Barrett, the handmaid justice. Well, I mean, that just left the vital institution coughing up blood on the back stoop.
That train has long since left the station, y'all.
Yeah, and as Randy in PA points out, imagine the conniption that would have, as opposed to a lesser white Christian lady.
Right, because I get so tired of them, for people like, you know, Cuckold Carson, screaming about identity politics, blah blah. I said, you know, so I just want somebody, not a black person, not like, you know, a black reporter or a black female reporter especially, but I just want somebody that, you know, from MSNBC to say, wait, you know, so you're screaming about identity politics. What is the current makeup of the Supreme Court? Or better yet, let's go to the beginnings of the Supreme Court. Thurgood Marshall was the first black person, period,
yeah,
appointed to the Supreme Court. And what year was that? 1960. What?
Yeah, LBJ.
And how long was the Supreme Court in existence at that point?
Well,
so you have this whole row of white, old, right, and mostly probably, you know, very well off men.
Well, Darlene just wrote in and said it's the black women's bane. Deal with it, Tracy. I mean, so what if the black women in line for consideration to the SCOTUS are more qualified and capable than at least six sitting SCOTUS justices? I mean, today, after all, an intrepid reporter pointed out to Jen Psaki that a recent poll indicated that 76% of Americans want Biden to consider all possible qualified candidates. Really? Of course, Jen neglected to question the reporter about what poll this was. Sorry. I know. Jen Psaki equals white girl from Connecticut. Ron and Raleigh says lesser black women. Robin, you must realize that no black person, male or female, is as qualified as any random white person, particularly a white man. Yeah, my God, if this had happened under Nitwit Nero, he probably would have elevated that Larry Van Dyke dude off the Ninth Circuit. You know, the guy who, you know, the American Bar Association said was lazy and absolutely unqualified for the job. And then he got onto the bench and went about the business of proving it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when the ABS this fool is trifling, when you talk about identity politics, you know, we have all these unqualified, less than anything white people, white men on the, you know, in Congress, hell, the President of the United States.
Yeah.
more than less than, I mean, beyond less than qualified. And no one calls into question anything, their intelligence or anything, but as a black woman, oh my goodness. Just speaking of, you know, calling into question their intelligence, as you know, white people calling into the intelligence of black women, I have a bone to pick with an incident that happened on Friday on the back porch. And I'm not going to, so I had dropped off a family in L.A. and came back on to the call, and I just said, you know, I'm on my way back to the airport, and I dropped off a family that's here for some football event at the Rose Bowl on Saturday. And I was basically, well, are you sure it's not soccer? I'm like, wait a minute. No, I said football. I didn't say football. They said, well, you know, some Europeans, you know, soccer, going on and on, basically calling into question not only my intelligence of what these people were here for, but my customers' intelligence. And I said, well, I don't remember the name of the event. Just Google it. And, of course, they couldn't find it on the Internet, which meant, well, now that it's not on the Internet, it doesn't exist. So, first of all, I'm highly pissed off and offended that my intelligence and my customer's intelligence was called into question. And by the way, the name of the event was the NFLPA, which is the National Collegiate Bowl. And the reason why it probably wasn't being able to be found on the Internet is because it wasn't open to the said public. Okay? But it was televised. So that part, but bottom line is, how dare you? Would you have said anything to me had I been a white man or a man, period? But because I'm a woman and a black woman at that, you're going to say, well, I didn't, you just said, I didn't, you know, basically, you said I didn't know what I was talking about. And I'm pissed and I'm offended. How dare you? And besides the fact, I have been caught up. Y'all know me well enough to know. I don't say stuff unless I know what I'm talking about, typically. And if I don't know what I'm talking about and I find out later, then I say, oops, I made a mistake. But the way people were coming for me, it was offensive. And this is when I see something, somebody say, are you sure it wasn't soccer? Really? Really? Like, I don't know the difference between football and soccer. Yes, I honestly understand. I am no football fan, but I know the difference between football and soccer. And I know enough about football to watch a football game and know what's going on. Because brothers and fathers. But the fact that you were calling my intelligence into question, you know, and I'm not saying you owe me an apology. You don't owe me shit. However, when a person says something, and you know me well enough to know that I'm no idiot, but you treated me as such, that was rude and hurtful and offensive. And don't come up with, well, I offended you. I'm sorry. None of it. You offended me. Because if you didn't offend me, I wouldn't be saying that. It's not an if. You did. Okay, I'm done. Oh, and by the way, when I asked about the Rams and I got shut down about, oh, they're not going to win. Who's going to the Super Bowl? Okay, now I'm done.
Tracy, you didn't hang up.
No, I'm still. No. I didn't mic drop and hang up. No, no.
Don't.
That part.
You know what? Yeah, that's kind of, you laid out a pretty good argument. I mean, it is what it is.
It's like I felt like Sophia in The Color Purple. All my life, I had to fight. I had to fight my brothers and this and this. A girl child ain't safe in a house full of, in a family full of men and folk. But the last place I thought I ever had to fight was at home. And that's the same thing what happened on Friday. The last place on this earth that I would think I would have to fight and have to prove my intelligence and prove what I have to say and still got shouted down is here on this show. And that's one of the reasons.
Well, to be fair, it was not on the show.
No. I'm sorry. On the back porch. It was not on the show. It was on the back. But Robin, let's face it. I've been shouted down or mansplained or talked over on the show as well, as have you, as have other women. And that's a problem because there's been a consensus of the different of the women that and you're doing it now, Todd.
What?
Sorry.
No, I'm like, you don't even know what I was about to say. I would like to hear more women.
But no, and that's what I was about to say. Because the reason why we don't have a lot more female callers is because they hear what I go through and now what Robin goes through, is going through, and what Darlene and anybody else has gone through. And they're like, they're still intimidated because they don't feel like this is a safe space. And again, this goes back to, you know, what happens when, you know, liberals or progressives, this is why we have problems. You talk about identity politics. We have a problem with how we talk and we treat and the lack of respect for other people who may not know as much as certain people, but, you know, have something to say. They have a story. They have a voice. But if they feel that they're not, their point is going to be laughed at or derided or questioned, that's a problem.
You know, I've got
that part.
I think I've got an interesting amplification of this, and it ties in with one of the primary topics of this evening's conversation. You know. We were talking about Pink Shrek, and I referenced that article you sent me from Michael.
Who is Pink Shrek?
Joe Rogan.
Who is Pink Shrek?
Joe Rogan.
Okay. I did not know that. Okay, that's what you got. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, he looks like a pink version of Shrek. And you know, for all that these little libertarians and right wingers bark and grunt about cancel culture, this dude has spread information that has probably led to people's deaths. As actual scientists and doctors have pointed out. But they're defending him. Spotify is defending him with every fiber of their being. And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa pointed out, speaking of funny money, Spotify stock was up 13%+ today. So not only did it make up for the $2 billion lost, they made up an additional $2.4 billion on top of that, $4.4 billion in total.
Uh-huh.
So we got that. Now, a comparison, and I am not endorsing any comments in this, but there's an actor, a woman by the name of Jacqueline Guzman, and over the weekend there was a funeral for a police officer who was killed in the line of duty responding to a domestic violence call. There's total agreement on all this. Young man was 22 years old. And so they held a funeral for him over the weekend at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan. And the NYPD showed up in force and filled the streets, and a lot of the streets in Lower Manhattan were shut down. Well, this irritated Jacqueline Guzman, who tweeted, she said it was ridiculous that they were shutting down all the streets for this. She made a TikTok video. Here's a hint. Don't make TikTok videos. And she said that the officials of New York do not need to shut down most of Lower Manhattan because one cop died for probably doing his job incorrectly. They kill people who are under 22 every single day for no good reason, and we don't shut down the city for them. This is fucking ridiculous. What if somebody's having a heart attack in this area and nobody can get to them because it's all blocked off for one cop? this was probably not the best way to say it. In fact, not making TikTok videos would be a great thing for this country. Because I still maintain that because it is, because it's owned by the People's Republic of China and the Chinese government, it is primarily a platform used for the promulgation of divisive propaganda. But that having been said, Ms. Guzman has been fired from her job with Face-to-Face Films. On Saturday, the company said Face-to-Face Films doesn't support nor can condone these comments made about fallen Officer Rivera. And so they canned her. The TikTok account where she shared it has been taken down. And she's now without work. Because, as it is so hard to explain to the dude bros of Joe Rogaine, companies can do that. It is completely legal to do that. Now, let's leave New York and travel down to Florida, where the ironically named Christina Peshaw is...
Peshaw?
Peshaw. Peshaw. Christina Peshaw is the official spokeswoman for white supremacist-adjacent Florida Governor Ron Rona Death Sentence, who was only elected with the help of real-life, no-kidding, Nazis. And so it was a rough... Sunday wasn't the best day in Orlando because the Nazis decided to march. You know, the same Nazis who voted for Rona Death Sentence. They marched between downtown Orlando. And they put up a demonstration on a bridge over Interstate 4 that runs between downtown Orlando and Disney World. And they put up their Hakenkreuz flags and banners with Let's Go Brandon written all over them. And granted, they, being Nazis, misspelled their sign. They had a rally earlier in the day in Orange County on Saturday, where the Nazis naturally yelled anti-Semitic slurs at vehicles going by and gave the Heil Hitler salute and wore clothing with Nazi insignia on it. And they held up banners saying they were part of the National Socialist Movement, which is a white supremacist organization. And when she was asked about all of this, Christina Peshaw, when they said, well, what about the Nazis who support, you know, your boss? Christina Peshaw said, Peshaw. How do we know it was even Nazis? Attempts to tie the protest to his policies are disgusting political smears. How do we even know they're Nazis? Maybe it was a stunt like white nationalists who crashed the Youngkin rally in Charlottesville turned out to be Democratic staffers?
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
She, defending Nazis, still has a job.
That's a job.
On the other hand, a woman of color who asks what happens to somebody having a heart attack with all the streets in Manhattan being blocked is out of work.
Oh.
And Joe Rogaine, on the other hand,
what?
Still has a $100 million contract with Spotify.
A job.
I mean, I would not have said it the way Ms. Guzman did. I think there's a better way. I think there's a better way to make that point. Maybe that's my white privilege coming out. But I like to think it's my ability to choose words a little bit better.
Well, you know, you are, because let me say, there's this a level of anger, seething anger that, you know, we
I'm speaking, you know, because I'm the spokesperson for all Black people, BIPOC people, women, and stuff like that. But we get tired, Robin. And yeah, there's a little bit of your privilege because you do have a vocab, you know, you are the purveyor of words. You are, you know, you love words and the art of word knowing. That is who you are. And you have a way of presenting and putting up stuff and putting down and calling attention to the situation with a flair that a lot of people, that's a skill that a lot of people don't have. And I include myself in when I say a lot of people don't have. But see, the problem is at times we just get tired. And sis is probably, you know, going, and that part of it is, I would not have put it on TikTok. I have to say that. Well, and let me say, and it's all transparency, I don't have a TikTok account. I don't know how to use TikTok, okay? So, no, I wouldn't have done it on TikTok because that is not how, that's not something that I use. But we just get tired, and I also, I don't know how old she was or is. And so we have that generational thing that she just put it out there to be out there. Now, should she, you know, I'm never going to tell somebody what they should and shouldn't do. After never, you know, maybe waiting a little while until after and doing a more recent piece. But then again, she was angry and she was, she had that righteous rage. It's called what we call, it's that rage that we get. And there's a phrase called productive rage. And as Black people, we're constantly, because I'm always in a constant state of rage. And so, you know, we have to channel it in ways that won't hopefully either get us killed, fired, thrown out of our home, thrown in jail, and stuff like that. But sometimes the rage is so acute and just ready to explode that sometimes we have zero F's left to give. And it's like, you know what? Whatever happens, screw it. I'm going to say what I got to say. Consequences be that. And we don't know what that's
going to be. And there don't seem to be, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to overtalk you. There don't seem to have been any problem doling out those consequences. On the other hand, Christina Pashal, like the white nationalists who crashed the Youngkin rally in Charlottesville and turned out to be damn staffers. You know what? None of them were Democratic staffers. She's a liar. I mean, yeah, Republican liar. She's a liar. And more to the point, what happened in Charlottesville last October at the Youngkin rally was a wholly owned stunt, and it was a stunt. No one was masquerading as anything. It was a stunt from people who are good at stunts, the Lincoln Project, which curiously is made up not of Democrats, but of the, of the same kind of Republicans who used to beat Democrats over the head with that crap.
Yep.
Okay. So they weren't Dem staffers at all, and Christina Pashal just lied. And what they did,
but it doesn't matter,
is they posed as far-right extremists with tiki torches at a Youngkin event. They did not hold themselves out to be, it was basically performance art. But again, for Christina Pashal, no consequences. For the Secretary of State of Florida, Laurel, whatever her name is, who refuses to provide the piece of correspondence that will allow a young Black man to take his seat in the Florida House of Representatives, no consequences.
You know, there's another story out there that I just found heartbreaking. A young woman of color apparently jumped from her 29th story balcony in Manhattan this weekend.
The former Miss USA.
Former Miss USA, 2019.
Yep.
What a horror.
This goes into the disparities also of mental health, access, and all that, and people putting on this facade. Because she was, this was an accomplished young lady. She was, first of all, ridiculously gorgeous. She, 30 years old, attorney. She was a correspondent on Extra.
MBA.
Yeah,
MBA and lawyer from Wake Forest. This is not some, these are not slouch degrees. She was a force to be reckoned with. And yes, breathtakingly beautiful. At one point in time, because she was older within the universe of pageantry, she started a YouTube channel or what. But she was working. She was out in the working world, and she started a page or an account where she went out and found affordable fashion for young women who were trying to make their way in the world.
Mm-hmm. She was a force to be reckoned with. And now she's gone. And we will never know why. We will never know, and I remember somebody saying that she died by suicide. She did not commit suicide. Because when you say somebody committed something, that's like you're saying that they committed a crime. Back to words matter. She died by suicide. And I heard it this morning. And I Googled it immediately and looked at her up. Because I know the last 2 years of the Miss USA pageant, there've been women of color, particularly black. There was that 1 year that black women won Miss USA, Miss America, Miss Teen USA or something. All three titles. Black women. I don't know if it was 2019 or when it was. But, women of color are winning these pageants because, we're pretty, too.
Damn straight.
We're intelligent, too.
So now that we have run overtime, and by the way, Darlene said, it's that mansplain, going back to the previous topic, it's that mansplaining anchored in the bros before hoes BS. Thank you for calling it out, Tracy. And thank you, Darlene.
You're welcome.
And... So now, just to wrap things up here for a minute, or for a second, under a topic we will call, gee, Robin, why in the hell are you running for the House of Delegates? I introduce you to someone you've never heard from before. This is an actual member of the West Virginia House of Delegates, a Republican from Hancock County, a former captain in the United States Air Force, an out-and-out homophobe and transphobe by the name of Delegate Patrick McGeehan. And he apparently gave some sort of, I don't know if it was a radio interview or something that he said on the floor of the House. I do not know the context. I only have here the words that he said. And he, just like Joe Rogaine said, he was disgusted that Richard Pryor would ever have had sex with another man. Delegate Patrick McGeehan, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican, Delegate Patrick McGeehan wanted to let everybody know what he thinks about those people. Oh, wait, it would help if I actually unmuted the clip. I need a producer. Here we go.
And, you who would ever thought that,
major, like, heavy industrial companies in the energy field or in the steel production would start participating in homosexual gay pride rallies. I mean, that's what's going on now. It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, there are no gay people involved in heavy industry or the steel industry. That's a manly industry filled with manly heterosexual men who only have sex with feminine female heterosexual women. It's a manly industry. Oh, what a load of crap. This guy allegedly even went to college. How do you get all the way through college with your bigotry and your homophobia and your transphobia intact? I honestly do not understand.
Maybe he went to Liberty University, Robin.
No, honey, he didn't. I done looked him up.
No, I know that I'm being sarcastic.
But he's got his own petard out. Let us let him hang himself upon it.
Homosexual gay pride rallies.
I'm sorry, not hang, hoist. Let us let him hoist himself on his own petard. Words matter.
I mean, that's what's going on now. It's insane.
Yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah.
You know, we're living in a world where, we're calling men women. I mean, look.
Actually, no. Nobody's calling men women. Women are women, and trans women are women. Period. But
I have a question.
Not according to Delegate. Well, let's let him just 1 second, and we'll hold on.
I mean, look.
Okay, because we needed to let him say. I mean, let me. I mean, look.
That fruit is ripe. His fruit is ripe. We got, you know, now you got to go down to the root.
Do we understand, to use the language of the church in which I was brought up, do we understand now a little bit better why I feel a burden on my heart?
Is it heavy, Robin?
Yeah, it is.
Well, now that we're on this vein.
I mean, do you, not to make this about me, but do you have any idea how sickening it is to me, how hurtful it is to me to just listen to this fool who has never set eyes on me, demean me for my authenticity? How infuriating it is. And there is scarcely, you know, and there is scarcely a voice. There are a couple of gay voices in the House of Delegates, but there is no one to speak with authenticity for me and people like me. Don't you think the number of trans people in West Virginia merits one lone voice who will stand up and say no to this kind of vicious hatred? Just one.
You got to do it.
And so I will probably, Republicans are Republicans, so I will probably be savaged if they deign to, you know, at least if I win the primary. But I will not be silent in the face of this.
Well, this the thing.
And
know,
yet, th- and this, think, and hold on, this guy thinks he has family values.
Would excuse me, empiricism would kind of like, I don't know. You know, you might not want anybody looking, you know, into your background talking about him. So, you know, these people are interesting because the more fervent, you know, the older we get, we see these people who are really fervent, they're hiding something. They're hiding something, but what I want to say is that you are, and I'm Tracy. I didn't mean to over talk you. If I did, it's just
no. That was, we were well, no, no.
Okay. I just want
to know. You know, I have to remember that we're all of a certain age. And because I know if I don't say something that's on my head, on my mind, right when it comes on my mind, and then when I have a chance to talk, it's gone. So I tend to interrupt. Well, very rarely, but I do. But the thing is, you know, and what Robert is feeling about being demeaned. And this is those things that, you know, the reason why I said what I said, because that's toxic. It is fucking toxic, male masculinity. And, you know, you're not too far away. You know, they're getting together like a carbon. And it is, you know, it's like, dude, you guys, let the girls talk, because, you know, we have opinions too. And just because yes, I admit when I am wrong on something, but again, to call into question you hear what you're saying, you're calling into question these people who flew all the way here from Texas to spend, they're spending time with their son who plays for Cal Berkeley. Oh, and by the way, the young man's name is Cameron Good. Keep an eye out on him, because from what I understand, he's a badass football player. But the bottom line is, why do you, I mean, you're so assured on how much you know, but you just knew good and goddamn well I was wrong. And how does that, do you hear how that sounds? These people came all the way out here, and all of this, and I'm upset with myself that I was wasting my time explaining it. It's like, why am I explaining myself to y'all? I don't owe you shit. But goddamn, how dare you? And it's like with Robin, being demeaned and being, you know, othered and being marginalized and all that, and not being taken seriously, because I just have a feeling that had you been me, and you said that you just took somebody, these people, to the, you know, all this, nobody would have questioned you because of your male privilege. They would have said, oh, dude, what is, you know, they would have asked for.
But it's a Ginsu commercial. Wait, there's more.
Well, wait. Oh, God damn it. You're killing me, Larry.
I confess to a certain amount of cultural cluelessness. I would not know some performer named Nelly if he was standing next to me in an elevator.
What?
Okay.
It's getting hot in here. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. I just don't know.
That's what he's saying.
Clueless white girl. But this past weekend, Madonna, the queen of pop.
Oh,
she put some pictures on her Instagram grid. And I gotta say, girl looking pretty good.
Oh, she is.
And in one of the photos, in some of them, she's wearing some fishnet tights and some lingerie. And in at least one of the photos, you can see her lacy cheeky panties under the fishnets. Okay, and she's posing next to a car, and she just titled it Car Trouble. It's cute. Well, Nelly decided he needed to mansplain her for those photographs. Absolutely innocuous photographs. And he not only commented, he left the comment on the post on Instagram. And I hate this celebrity gossip crap, but this is not celebrity gossip. This is evidence of a continuing problem.
It's not you.
Nelly, like, again, who I would not know, you know, would not know if he came up and said, hi, I'm Nelly. I'm like, cool, Nelly who? Because I'm ignorant. But he commented, some things should just be left covered up.
Oh,
body shaming.
It's 'cause you don't know who he is. I need you to watch any of his videos when the half naked women. But go ahead.
Body shaming, and I guess there's some ageism in there too. But body shaming.
Oh, yes.
Body shaming a woman for her choices in clothing. You know, the woman who grabbed the world's attention by telling women to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey Nelly, Papa don't preach, okay?
No, you didn't do a pop. No, no.
I mean, it's just.
No.
It's revolting. And I gotta close this program down because it's time to go.
Well, please do. And before you go, I forgot to do just real quick. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Okay, now you can go. Okay, now you can close it out. Happy birthday, baby.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks to everybody for all the sweet birthday wishes. We're gonna finish the month behind. We finish with a $327 deficit. That makes things hard, but we've always found a way, so we will continue to find a way. Darlene says, "Yeah, Madonna's worth like what? Almost $1 billion, and still getting mansplained." Yup. Thank you, Shorty in L.A. Read to the family. Congratulations in advance. Fuck them hating the trans community. Was so last year. Run, Robin, run, and congratulations in advance. Thank you. Thank you, Shorty. And I'm going to work on getting the website together, work on the email and all the social media. Oh, grassrootins is so hard. But we're going to do it. We're going to do it. So, there we are. January comes to a close. My first birthday comes near a close. Thanks to all of you. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Each and every one. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Hey, Ralphs, thanks for getting us down under the $300 mark. Thank you so much. That means that leaves only today. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now a union shop with the industrial workers of the world. Please consider reaching out to your member of the House of Representatives. Ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073. The clock is ticking on this Congress, and the clock is ticking on Appalachia's future. Stay safe. Get your booster. Make sure you're appropriately vaxxed. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Get your KN95 mask. Wear it everywhere and all the time. Anytime you're out in public among people you can't be sure are vaxxed, especially. But just generally, if you're out and about, be one of the smart people and wear it. Just asking questions. Maintain your social distance, use your hand sanitizer,
And, you know, if somebody comes your way, comes towards you, saying, you know, I don't like it when they say I'm spreading misinformation, no matter how much misinformation he's spreading, avoid that pink Shrek like the plague, because, well, he is. A brand new month starts tomorrow. Later.